We know those signals from SARS-CoV-1. We've seen this in cat coronavirus vaccines, where cats ended up with this horrible inflammation, swelling of the stomach, and about 30% of the cats died. So we know once you prime somebody with an antibody, and that antibody is good, great. But if you prime them with an antibody that is not good, sit back and pull out the popcorn, because we're going to be seeing something horrific happening immunologically to a population down the road. The honest answer is we don't know to what degree, but we do know the history of this, and history is one of the best teachers that we have.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Friday, September 17th. Thank you for joining me today. 2021 also. Thank you for joining me today. I've got a comprehensive show for you today. I mean, it started off as a way to sort of kind of combat some things that were coming in front of me from other people that were, you know, convinced that I'm somehow misinforming people. And it kind of developed into a larger comprehensive kind of overview of a lot of the things that we've been talking about for a year now, and things that are interestingly all of a sudden now coming back into view as new conversations, as a lot of this has. But one of the largest things to start out before we get into the bulk of the show today is to remember what we are doing here. Right? Why I'm doing this, why you're here, what the objective is. It's to inform people, to give them the ability to think for themselves, come to their own conclusions. And the problem is that there are people out there today, all walks of life. I get emails every day from people saying that we are only selling one side of a narrative, only giving one side of a story, which is, I don't even know how, I mean, is it possible that there's parts of this that we're not seeing or showing? Of course, that's almost a guarantee, because most everybody doesn't have every single part of every story. The point is, we do our best to bring you as much as we can. And at the end of the day, always, and the beginning, by the way, tell you to think for yourself. Don't listen to me alone. Don't listen to somebody else alone. Go out and find somebody else saying the opposite of what we're saying, and compare them, compare their source material. That's what I mean by compare them, and come to your own conclusion. Don't find somebody out there who's just saying the opposite of what this person's saying so you can shove it in their face and say you're wrong because this fact check says so. What is the fact check source material? Where are they getting the data from? It's not just real because fact check says so. It's about the source material. And yes, we can be wrong about things just like anybody else. But the point is, we're giving you that source material, and then I'm giving you my opinion of it, to conclude my conclusions around it, but then pleading with you to think for yourself. And how that can somehow be misinformation is beyond me. Now let's get into a really comprehensive show today about something we've already talked about: vaccine shedding, specifically spike protein shedding, as even the inventor, creator of the mRNA technology application, not the Robert Malone discussion of the technology used for the vaccines, but this is Dr. Warren, and we're going to talk about him again. The guy who openly said on Twitter that, yes, of course, this can be shedding, except he has a different opinion about what that could lead to, and we'll talk about that as well. But it's interesting how the very expert on the very topic can say, yes, that can definitely shed, and we're conspiracy theorists. Is he a conspiracy theorist? It's quite interesting. But we're going to go back into the shedding topic today because it's coming back up again. And we're going to go into, did I say 2013? Somebody in the chat. Oh, that's Sharon D. Of course, Sharon, you just tripped me up. That's fantastic. I love you for it. Anyway, she knows, inside joke between Sharon and I. I said 2021. Let's get back on the point. The idea that the reality here, that all of this stuff is very clearly leading to an illusion. That's the end point to where I was going there. I kind of missed my point in the middle there. But the reality is, this is all an illusion that's leading to something that's misleading people about the larger threat here. And you could take that a lot of different ways. But the shedding discussion itself was something that we talked about at least a year ago. And I'm going to show you the studies when this first came out in regard to when this was first being discussed, all the way back in 2020, I think May, and how they were showing this is a possibility, and how they're showing this is something that we should be concerned about. And now it got conspiracy theory cornered, and now it's coming back up again in an interesting way. Now we're going to talk about natural immunity again today because there's a new study coming out showing you yet again, for the 15,000th time, that this is exactly what we've been talking about. And this is not that I'm saying that proves anything other than the fact that that study says it yet again. The point is that there's a huge body of evidence around that topic that is showing you the reality. And even people like Dr. Fauci and funny things from the past. And yet here we are forcing this in people's arms without even considering the reality that they may have something that is longer lasting, more durable, more robust, and far more all comprehensive than anything that's coming from what they say is happening with that injection. On top of all the problems that we're going to see, like myocarditis, which I'll touch on again today, because guess what? There's more information about how that's a threat. And on top of the fact that they're telling children that they need to do this, knowing that they have an increased risk. In fact, we have experts on Twitter saying, anybody saying that this is not dangerous for children should be removed from their position. Except I can literally show you the science and the Oxford calculator and the NIH information and the CDC information that literally, quite literally, say they are at zero risk. And that myocarditis is an increased risk. And I'll show you all this today. Now we can go through all this over. I could rattle it off the top of my head all day long. A lot of this you've seen, some of it you haven't. We're going to get back into it today to reiterate this because it's a comprehensive one that's going to be needed because of how much misinformation is coming around from the side telling us we're misinforming. But to start off with some foreign policy, I just wanted to make this an interesting point here. If you remember this story and how constantly we covered this story, it's so ridiculous that one, this is actually still a thing. If you didn't know this, Guaido is apparently still the president of Venezuela, according to your government. And it's just, this is the first point to make a couple of points from foreign policy to realize how incompetent these people are. The very people that are trying to shove this stuff in whether we're talking about the vaccines or the misinformation down your throat are the very people that have tried to force this ridiculous clownish story down your throat. And guess what? They failed. It didn't happen. He's not the president. Everyone knows that. Everybody around anywhere remotely close to the situation knows what a huge dumpster fire this whole effort was, but they're still going because that's all that matters. Narrative. Hang on for dear life and just keep shoving it down, right? That's the square peg in that round hole. That's what they do. But read the thread from Venezuela Analysis. The U.S. will ride this spectacular train wreck of nonsense known as the Guaido pretend presidency into the sunset. Though Biden has allegedly put an expiration date on the crisis on the circus, which I doubt will actually happen, but that is the case, U.S. officials will try and stave off the inevitable disaster. Just, it's insulting to our intelligence that these are the kind of things that are happening. But also, on a note for Afghanistan, I found this very telling from CNN. Top U.S. spy, which is just kind of funny because usually they don't like to say spy because it typically has a negative connotation, but maybe there's a reason they're doing that today, says Somalia, Yemen, Syria, Iraq, all of them somehow simultaneously represent greater terrorist threat than Afghanistan. Now, you know what this says to me? Everybody look over there while we reestablish ourselves in Afghanistan. That's what this says to me, which is clearly what is happening. It's going to happen. My opinion, based on the data, based on what's already happening, contractors, current presence, despite what the media is telling you. Robert N. Lakesh has been on this from the beginning. But don't look at Afghanistan while we kind of reestablish ourselves and reorganize this game we're playing. But look over there for all the other locations we're still currently illegally occupying and bombing and manipulating. For freedom, of course. Now, going forward, Israel doing the same thing, continuing, by the way. And I'm really, you know, this, I gotta be honest, this story in and of itself, more than any others, maybe up there with Yemen, bother me that I'm not covering them as much as I used to. It really does. It's just such an impossible task for how much information is around this massive worldwide kind of endgame COVID illusion. But Israel is bombing Gaza for the third consecutive night that she's reporting this on September 12th. Where's the global outrage? Three nights in a row. And it's continued since. They are continuing to illegally commit war crime or illegally bomb them, which is a war crime, nonstop. This is a location that is one of the most densely populated civilian areas on the planet, most of them children. And they continue to do this. Nobody cares. But we all care about health and freedom. And what about the children, right? Where's all the outrage? I agree. It shows you that it's all fake. Gaza continues to be attacked on September 12th later in the day. Gaza armed groups are currently shooting at the attacking aircrafts, right? Of course, then they point back at that and say, look at their fighting, because that's illegal. No, in fact, the Geneva Convention continue and the United Nations continue to maintain that they are an occupied territory, therefore have the right to armed rebellion. But who cares about facts, though, right? Because they shot, they fought, so they're bad guys, right? That's just the simplified nature. And it continues into the next day. Israeli occupation forces shoot a Palestinian, then block medical workers from helping him, because that's what you typically do. By the way, that is an egregious war crime. There's no denying that. That's what happens in Yemen a lot, with back when Saudi Arabia was bombing relentlessly. They would continue to circle back and then bomb the first responders. And this is, there's no questioning what these things are. Now, this leads me to the point of why I wanted to open with some foreign policy before we get into the main part. We're going to start today with the discussion around that data and why this is a valid discussion point, as well as how Wall Street Journal comes right out of the gate today and says all these things are fake, even though we've been believing them this whole time. We'll show you that next. Op-ed from RT. Shocking report exposes how U.S. defense contractors have wasted trillions through fraud and corruption. If you watch this show, you're probably going, what's new, Ryan? We've known this for a long time, but this is important to understand on the overlap between who these are, the same authority figures that are lying to you about everything else that's going on. It's the same thing, guys. It's an agenda. This is policy you're watching, whether it's health related or foreign policy. It's the same thing. And that's what we need to understand. Now, regardless of whether you agree with that, recognize they're the same people in leadership positions. And this goes back long, long, like whether we're talking Obama to Trump to anybody else, really. It's anybody's position for as long as you can look back. And we've been making this point for a really long time, at the very least, back to 9/11 forward, because that's the kind of point I want you thinking from security state to biosecurity state. And by the way, for those that are going, this is on RT, Ryan, that can't be real. Well, okay, this is from the Brown University study. So if that makes it better for you suddenly, but the newly released Profits of War report from Brown University has revealed in staggering detail the full extent of the corruption unleashed by Washington's defense spending during the 20 years war on terror, right? The war of terror is the more appropriate way to put that. And remember, this is all stemming back from 9/11. And this is something that was utilized under the guise of fighting outwardly. And in fact, there's no way to deny this. You can look back to now and it was all pointed at you. Now, I shouldn't say all, that's not accurate, but it was primarily pointed at you. Now, sure, they argue it's because we're trying to protect you at home. Well, really, it ended up being stifling your rights and stepping on your rights and what you can do and controlling your life. And look at where we are now. Do you think that was an accident? Remember all the data. You can look back to Ben Swan's long ago documentary about ISIS and the roots of it and where it came from. the beginning of the Al-Qaeda. From the Mujahideen, right? We've talked about all of this, which have led to ISIS and led to where we are now. Whether you want to pretend like there's ties to that today or not, it started with the very people who are pretending that they need to fight the thing that they created, and on and on and on. It never ends. Now, as I'm trying to rattle these things off in really quick succession, the point is there's a 5-20-hour discussion right here. But we need to understand that this all stems back to the security state that has led to where we are now. And it shouldn't be surprising to you that it led up until this and is continuing, right? If it had ended 10 years ago, well, we wouldn't be able to step into the biosecurity state. There's a reason the 20-year war in Afghanistan had continued until now, and is still continuing, by the way. It notes that since the start of the intervention in Afghanistan in October 2001, Pentagon spending had totaled $14 trillion, with the U.S. war budget increasing between 2002 and 2003, by more than the entire military spending of any other country in the world. Your tax dollars, which, by the way, went to what discernible benefit, to what gain, to what accomplishment? Well, destroyed many countries, and a lot of civilians have been killed. And are we any safer? Well, no. Even by their own estimations, we are far worse than we were before. There's far more terrorist presence. There's far more all of these things. So this was an absolute abject failure. And that is if assuming that's not what they were trying to accomplish from the beginning. Just so we understand that. $14 trillion, lots of lives, countries destroyed, Libya, Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, on and on and on, all for your freedom, how do you feel about that freedom right now? Along the way, these contractors habitually engaged in questionable or corrupt business practices, including fraud, abuse, price gouging, and profiteering. These are the defense contractors that they are currently still using. You'll see this point made in the article. Wartime conditions meant standard contract processes were circumvented, right? And this is what they do today. Oh, well, we're in danger, right? We need to do this quickly because danger, same thing they're doing with health today. Well, I know that's the normal safety practice, but you're all going to die. So we're just going to skip past the safety measures, because this is the joke I made from the beginning. We're going to skip safety things for your safety. Just think about how dumb that sounds. That's what we're doing all the time, right? Well, and the contract's a little different, but in the health regard, but it's the same idea we're talking about today. Circumventing the contracts because we have to get it done quickly because the terrorists are going to attack. Well, Bidders, bids, and subsequent deliveries weren't subject to significant oversight. Shocking. So fleecing the Pentagon was extremely easy, particularly for well-connected companies with government ties. Now, I want you to think about how that's not just an oversight or incompetence, but dishonesty, criminal activity. Lockheed Martin, Boeing, General Dynamics, Raytheon, and Northrop Grumman, all the ones you're familiar with, have in recent years been awarded between a quarter to a third of all Pentagon contracts. It's surely no coincidence that four of the past five U.S. defense secretaries previously worked at one of the big five. It's not a coincidence, guys. That's a matter of policy. A key focus of the report is Halliburton. Right. This goes back to Bush. And before, I mean, we've talked about them. Halliburton's been on the usual suspects list for quite a while, which was awarded, it says, an open-ended contract without competition to provide a wide array of support for U.S. soldiers overseas, including setting up and managing military bases, which seems odd to me, by the way, maintaining equipment, catering, and even laundry services. Now, in 2003, internal Pentagon review found the company had dramatically overcharged for basic goods and services because it's all about patriotism, right? So overcharge you as the American that they're supposed to be patriotic with, overcharge the military, which is supposed to be protecting that freedom, right? They care about the patriotism and the freedom, don't they? And services to the tune of tens of millions of dollars, and conducted faulty work on bases that literally put soldiers' lives at risk. In fact, killed soldiers. Guess what? Nobody was ever held accountable for that. In some cases, Halliburton billed Washington for services it didn't even provide. The report, so understand, this is all on the record. And we're hearing about it now, all these years later, because of a Brown University study. Ask yourself why your government didn't divulge this information. A report documents how, from 2004 to 2008, at least 18 military personnel in Halliburton-built bases across Iraq were electrocuted due to subpar installations. It took the death of a Green Beret who was electrocuted while showering for Congress to finally launch an investigation into the issue. Now, you might think, oh, well, here's where they take accountability. Well, you'd be wrong. With a resultant review revealing that the wider building was found to have, quote, this is the Congressional Review, serious electrical problems almost a year before this person died. But Halliburton did nothing to remedy the situation, not least because its contract didn't oblige the firm to fix potential hazards. So, of course, because they care about, for, you know, safety and everything, but they go, well, it's not my contract, so we don't care. Now, guess what? The company was also found to have employed untrained, inexperienced electricians to do the work at a lower rate because it can't save the money, while billing Washington and you, taxpayer, for the fees for the professionals. That's dishonest, obviously. They're lying to you. I know it's a small lie, but how about we realize, well, the lie that led to the death of this Green Beret, but how about we realize that this is not just about electricians and building of buildings. It's about weapons. It's about occupation. It's about manipulation on the ground and sales and buildings from within those countries like Afghanistan. This is why we get $10 million, I forget what the number was, you know, $100 million hospitals that get built or actually never completed that we spend twice as much money on. You've seen the stories. This is why. Now, guess what? Despite all of that, criminal investigations being launched by the FBI, Justice Department, Pentagon, Inspector General during the mid-2000s into Halliburton's activities in Iraq specifically. Not a single employee was ever penalized. Its government contracts only multiplied thereafter. And a civil servant who'd raised numerous concerns about the thing that they're now proved is 100% true was demoted. And here we are today. Nothing has changed. If you're confused at all about what's going on here, you shouldn't be, because this is the reality. They are lying, cheating, stealing, manipulating at the expense of you while pretending they're doing it for you. Now, this doesn't have to mean that every single person involved at every point is doing something wrong and dishonest, but at the end of the day, from the top down, this is what's happening. If we've seen this exposed from 2000 to today multiple times, and they catch them in their own investigations and not only do nothing about it, but increase their contracts, the reality is these people are bad people. They don't care about you, and they're abusing the situation under the guise of fighting for you. Now, if you can't see the translation between this and where we are today, then I don't know what else I can do for you. Because these same people are the same ones that are pushing the situation today with our health, and we'll get into it in a minute. But to finish the opening part off here, Caitlin Johnstone makes a really interesting point. Here's the New York Times at war, which, ask yourself why the New York Times needs a specific war publication. That should tell you a lot about where we think we are. Suicides among post-9/11 veterans are four times as high as combat deaths, a new study finds. How disgusting is that? This is what we're doing to people. or we, excuse me, I hate that I say that. This is what the government is doing to people. And as a joke, but perfectly timed, The Onion puts out something that says FBI uncovers Al-Qaeda plot to just sit back and enjoy collapse of the United States. Right? I mean, it's a macabre joke, but the reality is, guys, that this is what's happening. We don't need anybody to step in. Our government is doing this to us. And it's really unnerving to see this. Now, please read the rest of this. There's plenty more. And of course, the obvious ties with Dick Cheney and Halliburton. I mean, this is not something that's new, guys. Very obvious. But bring this over into the lies of COVID-19 to start off, right? Now, the reason that it ended the title today with the concept of the COVID illusion. Tomorrow, again, to remind everybody, I'll be speaking in downtown Franklin at a rally. And it's going to be specifically about the COVID illusion. Now, I'm going to talk about why all these different parts of this, whether or not it doesn't have to mean fake or real or anything like that. It means that the government, at active levels, willful misrepresentation about the data, have constantly misled people about the combination of flu, pneumonia, and COVID, PIC, which is how it's listed right on their website. Shows you pretty clearly that if you're combining three things, even though if you want to pretend they're secondary or not, and suddenly flu disappears, well, weird, you can see that that's at the very least, to some degree, not accurate. Again, I always say you can debate that to what degree, but it's obvious. Or how about the fact that there are false positives that they've admitted to? Even the CDC's website, before it was washed clean, admitted a 30% false positive rate, and that's easy to find. Not the CDC part of it, but the reality of the PCR test in this regard, a yes or no answer. That's all you get. So, is it accurate to say every single one of those deaths is what they said? No, it's not. Now, we can debate to what degree those death numbers or case numbers are inaccurate, but you can't argue that it's exactly 650,000 deaths. We know that's not true. They've admitted that's not true, and they keep spouting out the number. So the illusion is across this whole show today. And this one just blew me away. This is the Wall Street Journal. Vaccine mandates can't stop COVID spread, which I agree. For different reasons, probably. But the reality here is that what they say in the first paragraph is just amazing to me because of how many things right now. Like, if I were to write this paragraph when I'm about to show you on Twitter, I would be immediately censored. Here's what it says. Now, I use this, remember, so I can read it easier because Wall Street Journal has this, you know, they're all charging you to read the news now, which, remember, news is supposed to be a public service. That's how it originally started, but now they're charging you because they need to. Exactly, which is why TLAB doesn't, because we're going to do this either way, but your support is why we continue. But here's what it says. Coercion won't work because those without symptoms can still pass the infection. Now, this is ridiculous to me in a couple of ways, because one, even the classically held concepts around respiratory illness is that you need the symptoms to spread it. Fauci said that himself when this all started. But that just kind of quietly got tucked away, right? Because the asymptomatic was the only reason they could argue why we needed to be on lockdown or why children were at risk, right? That's later been shown to be wildly incorrect, as all the main studies around asymptomatic spread, including the one with 10 million people, I've shown it many times, found only 300 asymptomatic people out of 10 million. And guess what? Every single one of those 300 were not transmissible. Why? Because they were asymptomatic. It's not hard to understand. Okay, so when they're saying this, it's leaning into that argument a little bit. Well, because the ones without symptoms can still pass it on. Well, no, what this should say is coercion won't work because the injected can still spread it, right? That's a fact. And they've admitted it more than once. And we'll make it even more clear as we go through today. But here's what it says. The Wall Street Journal says the COVID-19 pandemic has spurred a remarkable stream of scientific investigation, but that knowledge isn't translating into better public policy, which I completely agree with. One example, or the second part of that sentence, one example is a zealous pursuit of public mask wearing, a measure that has had, at best, a modest, dang it. Excuse me one second while I hit that link and frustrate myself. Hold on. Simplified article. There we go. Now we're back. Okay. As it says, one example is a zealous pursuit of mask wearing, a measure that has had, at best, a modest effect on viral transmission. Now, that's a really kind way to put that, because it's not even remotely true, because all the data that we continue to see, even from their information, by the way, even the one from Bangladesh I just showed you, the one that was actually about compliance, not about a secondary small part was about whether they were effective. And I showed you this, despite the fact that the media was like, the only study that matters. It's ridiculous how they play this game. But regardless of that, it comes down to the simple statement I make every single time from the NIH, from the CDC, from everybody. Not statistically significant. That's all that matters. To say it has a modest effect, no, that's not what they found. Including the May 2020 meta-analysis of 14 random controlled trials, by the way, who all found the exact same thing, not for source control or for the other way around, not statistically significant. Okay, but even this statement right here had a modest effect, that they would say that's fake news. They're going to say it's the best life-saving thing you could possibly do. Biden would say wear a mask because it saves lives. It's interesting to me that they can just state with such a matter-of-fact statement that it don't really work that well. Oh, yeah, we all agree with that. Here, wait, it goes forward. Or take lockdowns, they say. Shown by research to increase deaths overall. Are you serious? Of course we agree with that because that's the truth. But then it goes on to say, but nonetheless, still considered an acceptable solution. How is this even possible that we can be in a situation where now even the mainstream media is pointing out that, look, we're ignoring the facts? Isn't this ridiculous? We have been censored for talking about every single part of this exact point. Masks not working, lockdowns, in fact, hurting you under the guise that they're, or rather, excuse me, hurting you, but still being continued to be used under the guise that they work. It goes on to say this intellectual disconnect now extends to COVID-19 vaccine mandates. Yeah, exactly. The policy is prompted, as essential for stopping the spread of COVID-19, though the evidence suggests it won't. I mean, this is painful for me to sit here. And I mean, there's probably people watching right now who somehow have already worked out why this statement doesn't mean what I'm reading to you, right? Like, no. It's sort of like saying, no, all the people in the hospitals and dying, most of them are vaccinated, but here's why that doesn't mean vaccines don't work. It's painful. You know, if you have to hold something in the light and squint just right to make it look the way you want it to, it's probably not actually how it looks, right? Mandates infringe on personal autonomy, they say, which can lead to political strife and unintended consequences, but they have value in some situations. In general, however, wise policymaking respects the intrinsic value of personal autonomy and seeks the least burdensome path to achieve social gains. Now, no, I haven't read this. I just saw this actually reasonably before I went live. I plan to try to find a way to read this after. I'm just simply not going to pay Wall Street Journal to read their articles, but typically you find them on other sites after the fact. I will follow up and read into more. I promise you there's probably some, you know, they circle back around to make there's some kind of backhanded argument for why it should be the case. But just the way this starts blows me away, doesn't it? There's three simple things: that masks don't work like they say they do, that lockdowns are actually hurting you, and that vaccine passports are wrong and they don't work, or they won't work in this context at the very least. It's true. If I said that right now on Twitter, exactly like that, they would call me fake news and censor and delete my account. But this is my point. It only happens to certain people. Facebook has now purged 150 accounts and groups, entire groups, probably millions of people strong, from the German anti-COVID-19 restrictions movement. Right. So people that disagree with government action are removed from Facebook now. That seemed like not censorship. Think about how crazy obvious this has become. Remember when Facebook and Google used to pretend that that's not the case? Now they're openly saying, well, we're gonna, because fake news. How fast that happened, isn't it? It's amazing to me. Moments ago, they were all yelling that we're conspiracy theorists for saying they're doing exactly what they're doing right now. Citing, guess what? Coordinated social harm. Wow. Talk about an Orwellian term. So the coordinated social harm, how do you even quantify? Where's the metric for social harm? Well, they're going to say, because you're spreading misinformation, which we say directly translates to people not getting injected, which then means people are going to die, which is obviously a faulty logic. Well, even if it's not, in my opinion, that's wrong. Regardless, you don't get to jump four steps ahead and be like, you saying this word means that people will read something different, which means they will then act differently, which then will lead to someone's death. That's crazy. This is that in and of itself undermines the very concept of free speech. They know this. They don't care, but they're going to continue to censor people because they disagree with the government. Just like Biden, the UK, Germany, a lot of places now are openly saying that that's what they're going to do. Frank Analysis points out something really interesting to me before we get into the shedding discussion. This is somebody I'm unfamiliar with pointing out a tweet about Nicki Minaj, which I don't know if you saw. I'm barely even familiar with the story. As I understand it, she, you know, spoke out against the vaccine, or, you know, basically in some regard. Like, it's so crazy how just simply saying I should have a choice is somehow anti-vaccine today. It really is. But it says Nicki Minaj should be praised, praised for demonstrating how immediate and severe the anti-vax to far-right pipeline can be. You realize how lost this person is? Like, first of all, this is ignorant because it's obvious that this is not a partisan concept, right? It is obviously nonpartisan. There are people from, go to any one of these protests or rallies, and you will find people from all walks of life. People that are aware about the two-party illusion and how childish it is, people who are still stuck in that on the left and the right, and people in some other situation. They're all very aware that this is nonpartisan. But somehow they're managing to say, because she espoused one idea about her freedom, her ability to have to make her own choices, that immediately then makes her far right. And they're proving, because look, you have one idea, now suddenly you're a white supremacist far right maniac. This is the psychosis that comes along with the two-party illusion. Now this person says, disagree with me on one issue, you're far right now. I mean, this is the polarizing, broad brushing, two-party illusion stuff. Like I keep pointing out, like trust women or, you know, any of the nonsensical things they say until suddenly it changes when it suits their political interests. But as he points out, this is a post-partisan human rights issue that has nothing to do with left versus right. And I agree. Frank Analysis has been doing a great job lately. You know, he has since I've met him. I think he's doing a good job on this. What's interesting though, is that this is such a ridiculous concept. And now Nicki Minaj is like in the crosshairs for doing what exactly? For disagreeing with the mob. Now, I want to play this clip for you. I got to be honest, it sort of irritates me that I'm in such solid agreement with what Tucker Carlson is saying. I'm kind of joking when I say that. It doesn't really matter. It's just that I deep down feel pretty strongly that he's not doing this for your interest. That's my opinion. And of course, I could be wrong. Maybe it's just because I'm very jaded and you know, I've been fooled too many times. But nonetheless, listen to what he's going to say here. And as I always point out, throughout history, it happens repeat. It's like a teeter totter. You'll find that one side or the other will kind of consistently align with the truth because it suits that agenda. One side's crazy, the other side's on the side of sanity. You know, remember that back in the day when it was all these crazy evangelical right, you know, and all the normal same. That's the way they perceived it. They pushed it out anyway. Not that I believe that on either side of this. They're all crazy as far as I'm concerned, but it always flip flops, right? So my point being is that when they say it, like when they're saying this, it's because it behooves them right now to do so. Not necessarily because they believe it or because they're fighting for you, or I could be wrong. Now listen to what he says. This is actually incredible to me for how exactly where we are and how obvious this is. Thank you for COVID-1984 for sharing this.
The COVID vaccines aren't like other vaccines that you might be familiar with. So here are some things that we know about them. Unlike, say, the smallpox vaccine, which prevents you from getting smallpox, the COVID vaccines do...
Which I have thoughts on that, by the way, but that's not the point.
...not necessarily prevent you from getting COVID. The COVID vaccine does not prevent you from spreading COVID to other people.
Exactly.
The long-term effects of the COVID vaccines are unknown and at this point cannot be known. We do know the vaccines are many times less effective than natural immunity in protecting people, and close to 100 million Americans already have natural immunity.
In fact, the CDC puts that at way over 160 million, and that was done months ago, by the way. I've shown you that directly from their website. Just to real quickly point out, everything he said so far, everything is literally backed up by scientific research, and I've shown you all this. So what's funny is there's probably people out there that are going, oh, Tucker Carlson, so they're immediately dismissing it. Which, not, I don't think Tucker Carlson's on our side, but I don't do that. I could literally watch Maddow for all I care and come and I would listen and understand and then probably walk away going, gosh, she's crazy. The reality is though, it doesn't matter where it's coming from. You need to listen to the material. And what's crazy is people will dismiss this because Tucker's saying it, which in some cases is probably why they do it. Sort of like when I point to Alex Jones and that same concept. This is my opinion, just to be clear, but everything he said so far is absolutely verifiable, easy, and yet it's being dismissed.
We know that in some cases, the COVID vaccines cause potentially fatal heart problems in the people who take them.
Yep.
One new study shows that teenage boys are six times more likely to suffer cardiac damage from the shot than they are to be hospitalized with COVID itself. We're going to protect vaccinated workers from unvaccinated.
And obviously this has been cut, by the way, just so you could, that's pretty clear though.
Workers, that's what the president said. Think about that for a moment. Does it make sense? If the vaccine works, and they assure us adamantly that it does work, and they punish us if we question how well it works, then how can the unvaccinated possibly pose a threat to the vaccinated? It's about power. If they can make you take medicine you don't want or need, they've won. You are theirs. You belong to them. If they can force you to take a vaccine that you don't need, what can't they do? Why don't they, I don't know, make you take psychiatric drugs if you're persistently disobedient?
This is a really, really valid point, guys. Somebody might try to make this out to sound crazy. His point is flawless. And at this point right here, there's no logical difference between the two things. If they argue that it's a public threat, an emergency, same point.
Express the wrong view, get a Thorazine shot. Why couldn't they do that? What's the limiting principle on them?
Exactly.
In fact, you can imagine a panel of CNN doctors explaining that we'd all be a lot safer if the mentally ill propagandists on the radical right got the treatment they need.
Now, how about this? Just because this is my point about how it's always limited to one thing or the other. How about a panel on Fox News talking about how the radical left and their transgender push or their whatever needs to be medicated because this is a danger to our health? Look, there's plenty of people that would agree with that on the right. And vice versa, what he said, plenty of people would agree with it on the left, saying the Republicans and the right are dangerous white supremacists, right? It's not just one side or the other, but that's how it limits you. And because you agree with him up until this point, and probably some still do, even though he says, you know, it's not just one side or the other. That's the point. It's just as logical for the left to the right or the right to the left. That's how you have to see this. But his point is still sound, even though he hones it into a two-party paradigm argument. I think that's why they do this. Now, somebody in the chat saying I should be nicer because maybe I'll be on the show, or, you know, I'm not saying I'm certain that he's doing this from dishonest point. But what I do know is that point right there, whether he means to do it or not, is dishonest. That's all I'm saying. And maybe he doesn't realize that. And I'd love to inform him, but I don't think that'll ever happen because I'm pretty sure half the stuff's coming from our show.
And stop spreading their dangerous conspiracy theories. So giving them psychotropic meds is an urgent matter of public health. Does that sound far-fetched?
Uh-huh.
Keep in mind, it wasn't so long ago that authorities in this country forcibly sterilized and lobotomized American citizens against their will. Why? In the name of public health. And it wasn't just a few people, by the way. It was a lot of people. So explain slowly so we can understand why that can't happen again. Tell us why some version of that isn't unfolding right now. Suddenly things are moving very fast and they are all moving in a very specific direction.
Yep, I completely agree, right? I mean, do you see where this is happening? You see where it's going.
And so long ago that authorities in this country...
Right, that. And the eugenics part of this is such an important crossover. Whitney's talked about this extensively. I've covered it with her many times on the show. There's ties to eugenics, like to the Dalton Institute that was very clear recently called the Eugenics Institute. And these are tied to people that are on Operation Warp Speed, tied to people that are involved with Biden's administration. Like, this is obviously there are crossovers. It doesn't make any sense why 60% of the deaths in England, they reported this months ago, were all people with disabilities. There's no way that lines up, or that people were being forced vaccinated in Germany that were all people with dementia. Like, it doesn't make any sense. There's something going on around this. But regardless of my opinions there, what he just said is absolutely factually correct. And this is why it's so infuriating that we can be at a point where that stuff that you can easily look up is being dismissed as crazy because politics. Absolutely ridiculous. Now, this is where we get into the shedding discussion. Now, I'm going to start because there's two parts of this, right? Here's a new study, yes, on a preprint from August 24th. But this one is I want to show you this PDF version just so we can see, you know, that most of these people are PhDs, 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 right? Just, it's important to see that. Here's the study just on the different version, not PDF, August 24th. Now, this is talking about the idea it's a shedding of infectious SARS-CoV-2 despite vaccination. So not necessarily spike protein vaccine, but you shedding. Because normal, typical definition of viral shedding, which is how these things spread, respiratory viruses, right? Or in general, just you're coughing and that's how this is happening. But the point is that saying in this study that it happened, this is proving that it happens anyway, after being vaccinated. So it's first important point. But then we're also going to talk about how these things are being conflated. And I think in some degree, intentionally so, by the media to pretend that this is what we think and we're conflating the idea with the spike protein. Now, I'll get into the data, which is what I talked about, the title, that it's going to be the data around this, and I'll show you how real this is. Now, not that I'm saying I'm proving this is the case, because that's not what we do here, that I'm showing you that the argument is rooted in scientific research. It's directly coming from one of the people who discovered the technology, right? I mean, and this is Dr. Warren. We've already talked about this, but before we get there, let's read this new study. about how this is happening anyway, which continues to speak to the lack of efficacy around this injection to do the one thing that we were sold that it would do, stop transmission. Outbreak investigations suggest that vaccinated persons can spread Delta. We all know this already, right? The frustrating part is that we were reporting this based on the research months ago, well before they grudgingly admitted it. And now we're here. It doesn't stop it. Right. So ask yourself, if they're continuing to tell you that Delta, which, by the way, have already proven there's no way that they could truly know, they take samples from certain cities and give you an estimate that's directly from the CDC about what the dominant variant is. When they test with a PCR test, there's no way they can know. I proved this already. Now, the reality is that they're telling you that Delta is everywhere. So let's take that at face value, because that's what they're saying, their narrative. That's how we do it on the show. So if Delta's everywhere and they're already finding a multitude of ways that it doesn't stop transmission, why would it make any sense to force it on somebody? Why mandate this injection for people that doesn't stop? I mean, this is just a means to an end. And we've already seen this, a booster next and on and on. If it doesn't do what they say it needs to do to stop the very thing they're trying to stop, why would they force it on people? Well, that's a question you should be asking. Individuals infected with SARS-CoV-2, despite full vaccination, have low CT values and shed infectious virus. Now, what they're saying there is in regard to the PCR test, and meaning that, you know, remember how that works. The increasing the cycle threshold, think of it as magnification from a very simplified version. The more you increase it, the more it magnifies. And the point is, the argument being based on plenty of experts, including Dr. Scoglio, PhD, and even from Dr. Kerry Mullis, who pointed this out from before he died, before this all started, this is not suited for what they're using it for, period. Because there's a yes or a no answer. And the further you magnify, it becomes impossible to actually differentiate. And that is why over 40 to 45 cycle threshold, it becomes not replication competent, meaning it doesn't work. Now, if you think that that's incorrect, that I'm a conspiracy theorist and I'm making that up, well, yet again, let me show you from the horse's mouth.
Evolving into a bit of a standard that if you get a cycle threshold of 35 or more, that the chances of it being replication competent are minuscule. Mm.
Okay, so meaning it doesn't work, right? That you won't get the result you're looking for. And in fact, the higher you go, the worse it is. Now, again, Dr. Scoglio, PhD, did this live on air, by the way, and proved, as far as he's concerned, that this thing does not work, that 95% false positives was his number if you go over 40 to 45 cycle threshold, which, by the way, we've already shown you many times over, is what the vast majority of people are using in this country. So therefore, it's very easy to see that speaking of the illusion again, is creating a vast, vast conversation of false positives. That's why when people go into the hospital for a broken leg and get tested with something that has that high of a false positive, oh, what do you know? You've got COVID. Now you're a COVID hospitalization, even though you were there for something else, which is what they've already admitted from Newsweek to many other mainstream outlets. But coming back to the point, this is talking about low cycle threshold, which indicates that it's easy to see to a degree based on how this works, which means that the people who are vaccinated are being seen with shedding infectious virus on a low cycle threshold, which suggests that they're not, it's not like they have a small amount. Here's what it says. Though these results indicate that even asymptomatic, fully vaccinated people might shed infectious virus. Now, to the point about asymptomatic, the reason this is happening is because of the spike protein. And we'll get into this. This is the crossover between the vaccinated argument. Now, people who are spreading the viral particles and continuing to shed, that's one thing. But we're talking about the spike protein, which I will prove to you next based on scientific research, approved that they said this in this research. They argue that this very much can happen that way. Now, remember, on top of that, which we'll get to in a minute, the spike protein by itself can cause disease. We'll come back to this. So if that's the case, which the scientific research has said, jumping ahead of myself here, excuse me, then if you can shed this, and it can based on the research we will show in a minute, then you can pass this along, whether or not you're asymptomatic, because it's not coming from your sneezing. It's coming from something else. Now, just remember that as we go forward. But what they're saying here, even if you want to believe the asymptomatic argument, that they're saying fully vaccinated people actually can shed infectious virus. Does that sound like something that's working? Importantly, we show that infectious SARS-CoV-2 is frequently found even in vaccinated persons. We show that infectious SARS-CoV-2 is frequently found. And this is the same argument in regard to mucosal immunity, because that's not what this injection is even capable of doing, as we've shown you many times from their own data. And even Fauci would point out, that's how these things spread, respiratory viruses specifically. Without mucosal immunity, you're not going to, and again, that's why we keep finding, as I think three studies have now found, increased viral load in the nose dramatically. Now it says Delta lineage SARS-CoV-2. And by the way, that my point there in the nose of people who are vaccinated. Delta lineage SARS-CoV-2 can achieve low cycle threshold values consistent with transmissibility in fully vaccinated individuals across a range of settings. Interesting. Vaccinated and unvaccinated persons should get tested when symptomatic or after close contact with somebody. Then the point being there is that regardless of what your status is, they're all the same things apply. So for all those people screaming, waiting on your next booster, well, you still got to get tested. You still, regardless, whether symptomatic, asymptomatic, close contact, and then it goes on to say continued adherence to wearing a mask, social distancing, right? Regardless of your status. Sounds like it makes a lot of sense, right? Now, this is the new one from August 24th. Here is one from way before COVID-19 that I've already shown you in the past. Now, this one specifically is about the concept of gene therapy, specifically what they call VBGT, virus or bacteria-based gene therapy, which, by the way, is exactly what this is. Regardless of the mainstream aversion to using the gene therapy term, that is what they called it. That's what these companies used in their terminology before the COVID clown world came around. So it's not a secret. And I'm not talking about some adaptation of it. No, this was the exact thing they're working on. This is gene therapy. It's what it is. One day looking back, some even the people that are denying that will realize that that was one of these weird situations where, you know, trust women happened, where it's like, no matter what, that's always the case until later Biden says, no, not her though. Oh, now we don't have to trust everybody, right? That's what will happen eventually. And usually does with any of these topics. It is gene therapy, and I've shown it to you right on their own documentation. The point being, from 2015, this is talking about those exact concepts and the analysis of shedding from these products. Now, it doesn't have to mean, to be obvious transparency, that every product will do so. But what it does mean is they're well aware of the possibility that gene therapy-based bacteria, virus, you know, virus or bacteria-based gene therapy products can do this, can lead to this. Now, here's the first part. Under the extent of shedding, it says raw data in the shedding report. Now, this is basically an overview, just so we're clear on what this is doing. This is an overview of what they should do if they do detect shedding during one of these studies. Raw data in the shedding report should be accompanied by a corresponding analysis that is comprehensive and describes the following. The number of patients that are shedding as a percentage of the total patients in the study for each sample type, dose, regimen studied, the duration of shedding, including the first and last day of the shedding, and the peak periods of shedding in each sample type. The period when shedding stops in most patients in the study should also be clearly identified. The clinical samples where shedding was consistently noted and samples that were consistently negative for all the patients in the study. Number four, the quantity of the product shed in a clinical sample. That's interesting. The amount shed should be reported taking into account the final volume mass of the clinical sample. And on and on, when the assessing of the quantity of shedding, and the point being, it's very clear that this is something that seems to be possible, which is the only point I'm making with this part of it. I think that was, there's one part where I missed the bottom. Okay. Next one. I think that was this one. Shoot. I think I'm going to ruin my window here. Hold on one second. Make sure I didn't miss one of these parts. Maybe it was this one. There's one part that I wanted to scroll down and catch that I thought was really, really interesting. Maybe not. Oh, well. Okay. I feel like I'm pretty sure I'm missing something. In any case, here's the next part. Contains non-binding recommendations. Anyway, so it's driving me crazy. I'm pretty sure there was an important one. But it goes on to say, as needed, data and analysis of clinical monitoring for transmission to untreated individuals in the target patient population, potentially infected humans and cause disease, right? This is what the other relevant information to collect from the VGB. This is the acronym I was talking about. The following should be discussed on potentially infected humans and the cause of the disease. It says the natural or acquired immunity of the general population that could potentially protect against infection from the shed product. Like, the way that they frame this is very interesting. So we're very clearly talking about something that's shedding that could infect you. Now, there's no way to misunderstand that. That's with the gene therapy concept. Like, they will adamantly scream that this is not even possible with certain kinds, especially mRNA. But that's the gene therapy. That's what this is talking about. The therapeutic options to treat the infectious disease in the case of transmission to untreated individuals of the shed product. So transmission from people who got the injection to people that didn't. Transmission, preventative containment measures that can limit spread of the shed product beyond the treated individual to minimize exposure of third parties, particularly immunocompromised adults, seniors. Note that the data you collect on onset duration when shedding can inform appropriate preventative measures. It says possession of transmission to contacts beyond the healthcare and home setting. I just find this to be very, very clear. Let me do this just to make sure I didn't miss one part. 1415. Oh, maybe it was over here. Maybe that's why. Yeah, that's what it was. It's the extra light part down there. Okay, so here's the next part. So this is from 2015. Long before COVID-19, just simply the possibility that these products can shed. And here's what you should do if that is something that you are going to be seeing, right? Okay. So here is, jumping to reasonably closer to the day, this is the Pfizer study of their injection. Where is it? Should be listed in the BN. Well, either way, they're talking about biotech Pfizer injection. They're going to list it here somewhere. The BNT, B12, whatever the, oh, there it is right there. Right? BNT162 is the base, and there's the two variations of it. Now, anyway, the point is they're testing these. Here's what they found in their own study. Not what they found or what they had listed in the study of this product. RNA-based COVID-19 vaccines, gene therapy vaccines, because that's what this is. Here's what it says. Under 8.3.5, exposure during pregnancy or breastfeeding and occupational exposure. Now, what is that? What does it mean? Exposure during pregnancy, EDP. If an EDP occurs, if a female, understand this is, and this has been discussed by plenty of other experts that have called this out. There's no reason this would be in specific Pfizer study like this if it wasn't something they were at least potentially concerned about. And that is why I showed you this, because it's very obvious that this is something that is on the table for these products, which is why it was included. And it says, an EDP occurs if a female is found to be pregnant while being exposed or having been exposed to study intervention due to environmental exposure. Below are examples of environmental exposure during pregnancy. A female family member or healthcare provider reports that she is pregnant after having been exposed to the study intervention by inhalation or skin contact. Okay, we're talking about this same injection. Then it says a male family member or healthcare provider who has been exposed to the study intervention by inhalation or skin contact then exposes his female partner prior to or around the time of conception. Now we're talking about an injected person who passes it to another person who then passes it to their female partner. Now I'm not saying this means that's 100% the case. What it means is it was a consideration in this study. Very important. Now, that in and of itself doesn't prove anything. But now what we're going to get into next is the research around this exact topic, right? Not just what their studies themselves found, because there's a lot of arguments for this or that or why these aren't exactly what. There's always something. No, that's from 2015. It doesn't apply to this. No, they put that just in case. There's all these points, but that's not how these work. But regardless, let's make sure we realize, I wasn't even going to include this. I just wanted to include this because here's another example of Mr. ZDog MD, Mr. Fact Checker, who literally says this is ridiculous. And I'll go through right now and show. And his part was specifically the idea of shedding to threat, basically the menstrual topic, right? The idea that this could potentially affect a woman's menstrual cycle or any other idea of shedding and hurting a woman who's pregnant or otherwise, you know, in any other way. Again, despite Pfizer's own study investigating that. Okay, so going forward, let's just jump back to April 30th here, and I've shown you this already being discussed. Reports of menstrual cycle changes after COVID vaccine highlight issues with clinical trials. And of course, it's just a mainstream article. They're just pointing out that they are finding reports about it. Of course, they're going to say, well, it's unconfirmed, which means that we're not going to ever look at it. It doesn't exist because it's not real, which I don't know how unconfirmed can translate into we know for sure it's not real, but that's what does happen today. Here's another one from the Mirror. This is actually as of the 15th. More than 30,000 women in the UK report irregular periods after getting the COVID jab. Right. And I think this was Frank Analysis as well made the joke about this and said, you know, or maybe that was, no, I thought I had his tweet here too. But, you know, we're not allowed to talk about this, right? Can't even bring it up. That's crazy. I mean, does that prove that it's connected? No, it doesn't. But with all of this combined, and as we keep going forward, obviously there's something that we should be asking here. 30,000 women reporting irregular periods. Now, remember, we also talked about people that were menopausal who got their period again after being around somebody who got the injection. Now, anecdotal for sure, but there are a lot of them. And there are a lot being reported on Bayer's and plenty of other locations. They're just not being entertained. Now here, by the way, for those people that are dismissing this as some kind of, this is the NIH website. August 30th, guess what they started doing? They're funding studies to assess potential effects of COVID-19 vaccination on menstruation. What do you know? Now, I'm not necessarily implying that this means they're looking into shedding, but what it means is if they're studying whether or not this affects your menstruation on August 30, 2021, it means they don't know. So all these people that are screaming out there, like Z-Dog MD, that this is fake news, of course, he's specifically getting into the shedding part of it, but anybody else, there's plenty of them out there saying this is fake news anywhere. Experts, doctors, the woman on Joe Rogan acting like there's nothing to back this up. So ask yourself why they're studying it then. If they're studying it, that means they don't know. So how can you then argue that we 100% know it's fake news? And also realize that these kind of things are usually done before they're injected mass injected to people's arms. But who cares, right? Safe and effective, outweigh the better risk, benefit. Who cares, right? It's just relentless push. It doesn't matter. It's all safe no matter what while we're testing whether it's safe. Now, here is where we get into the expert on this topic saying something that challenges what they're saying is true. But I'm also going to show you how he's making the case just because it can shed doesn't mean it translates into what people are arguing. But I'll let you decide for yourself. Now, I had to find this, even this tweet on the Wayback Machine, because even this tweet was already removed by Twitter. In fact, I believe his entire account was deleted. I'm not sure exactly. Let me do that. I'm sure we can find out right now. Find out. No, it looks like he's still there. Anyway, here's the tweet that I had to hunt down. This is where I first saw this, in fact. He says, my favorite thing today is thinking about how Twitter suspended the inventor of mRNA technology for saying that vaccinated persons could shed the spike protein. Yeah, that's literally what happened. And I'll show you this more specifically. This was his tweet. Luigi Warren, currently undergoing another bogus lockout for posting absolutely correct statements on Twitter. That's what he's saying about his removed tweet. Here's what it says. I believe the shedding idea is that the vaccinated shed spike protein, not virus. Well, what do you know about that? And it's certainly true that people vaccinated with mRNA vaccines do shed spike protein, but in minuscule amounts that almost certainly can't cause disease. Okay. So it's double. There's two parts to that, right? You can't only read the first part. You have to read the expert saying that he also believes that doesn't translate into direct disease. Now, he could be right, but based on the other parts of this, including what has happened since he made this statement, I believe there's more to this. That's my opinion. Regardless, recognize that the first part of that statement is absolute, unequivocal, fake news, conspiracy theory by anybody on the side of vaccine good argument here, despite the fact that he's saying that. We'll be censored for pointing this out, right? I've already been people throwing me fact checks. Here's fake news. That's not true. Okay, well, I'm not even arguing that you're wrong. It's 100% true. I'm saying I don't know if that's the accurate situation here when you have an expert saying that's happening. You can't just be like, well, fact check said no, so there you go. Because that's not very intelligent. We need to read the data, the source material. And if you read the source material, you'll find that it's typically sourced back to something that we've already talked about. Now, the data here, you won't find in this discussion. Now, in fact, we will continue to show you all sides of this argument as we read the other studies. And by the way, which we've already done on past shows. Here's the tweet, by the way, that should be there, that's not. Here is a follow-up in regard to something that was removed, but I was just hunting down his account. Here he still is on Twitter. Here he says, just heard about this on the radio. Just heard about this. They're talking about the shedding conversation. And it says, let's just really quickly date this. So this is, it only says one day. Oh, May 29th. Okay. So this is just before this. So he commented, it's actually in response to Naomi Wolf, which is interesting. So she's been suspended from Twitter, apparently, or the tweet was. No, it is a Tesla account. So that's crazy. I didn't know Naomi was suspended. God, that's so crazy. Well, there you go. Yet another person bites the dust when they're continually trying to tell you what's going on. But so he responds by going, yeah, I heard this. Interesting. And makes me just a teeny tiny bit more open to the idea that there might be something real behind these reports. And what he's pointing to is this. According to a study showing how dogs are able to smell whether people are actually sick. Now, I'm not saying I agree with that. That's true or not or whatever. My point is that he's saying that suggests what he is arguing. Because if dogs can smell it, well, that suggests that something is coming off, right? That's what he's saying, this expert. Now, they also link to his tweet down here, and they link to this article right here, which I want to point out in a second, which is right here, just to make sure we're very clear on this, that this is the Luigi Warren patent. This is under patents. I love how it says right here, reprogramming cells with synthetic messenger RNA. Again, synthetic, which they still hide from you for some weird reason. It's called mod RNA, not mRNA. It's right in their documentation on Moderna and Pfizer. It's mod. It's modified RNA, not mRNA. That's a difference, and I don't know why they keep that from people. I mean, I do know why, but his patent is for reprogramming your cells with messenger RNA, right? This is what they're using today, even though they would pretend reprogramming is fake news, despite that's what they're using. Now, going forward, here is India Today pointing out mRNA technology pioneer says COVID-19 vaccinated people can shed spike protein. Twitter says delete this. May 31st. Says Twitter recently suspended the account of Luigi Warren, apparently for violating Twitter rules. Luigi's now penalized tweet addressed his views on whether spike protein is shed by people vaccinated with mRNA vaccines. For those unaware, Luigi is the current president and CEO of Cellular Reprogramming Inc., a biotechnology firm based in California. This was on May 29th. More importantly, Luigi is renowned for his work with Derek Rossi, which we reported on, the co-founder of the famous biotechnology company Moderna. Back in 2010, Luigi and Derek worked together to be the first to describe mRNA-based reprogramming. There's the tweet again. I believe the shedding idea is that the vaccinated shed spike protein, not virus. It's certainly true that people vaccinated with mRNA vaccines do shed spike protein. Again, but he doesn't think it can lead to illness. In short, it says Luigi is one of the pioneers of the prevalent applications of the mRNA technology. Luigi pointed this out in an appeal to the flag content. He mentioned to Twitter how he believes that the reason he was locked out of Twitter is unfair and that he is the inventor of the technology on which this injection was founded. And so he knows what he's talking about. Now, I believe they unblocked this tweet, but then later removed it. Or maybe I'm not sure how this worked out, but it's gone now. And as he says here, viral shedding, and this is on May 4th, even further back, plain old viral transmission during nascent vaccine-induced immune response, I can buy. Claims about spike shedding strike me as science fiction. The vaccinated shed tiny amounts of spike protein. I don't believe it's relevant. Okay, and this is before. Now remember, he then followed up by saying this. I believe the shedding idea is that vaccinated shed the spike protein, not virus. Certainly true that people are doing it. Same point. It evolved a little more to be pretty much on the nose. Yes, that's happening. Since May 4th, but the end result is the same where he goes, but I don't think it can cause the illness. Okay, so keeping that in mind, it's very clear, first of all, that the expert does say this can shed. Not talking about viral load shedding from the injection, from being sick. We're talking about the vaccine being injected into somebody's arm and that creating something that then is shed, which then itself, the argument being, can potentially cause disease, even though he disagrees with that. So here is where we get into the data. Okay, so this is from November 2020. Infection of human sweat glands by SARS-CoV-2. Now, the point, overarching point, is that this is talking about how this, since this time, it's become very clear, even by the mainstream discussion, that the spike protein is clearly the point. That's what's causing the problem. So I always point this out. I don't understand how it makes sense to argue that the spike protein is the problem, but then you're injecting something that creates the spike protein. So what they're saying is, oh, well, it's just the one time, which I'll prove to you is not true. And then when the next thing comes around, well, then that's already out of the way. And now we know how to fight the spike protein. Not what's happening. It's being found in all around your body, organs all throughout your body, days afterward. I'll show you all the data from peer-reviewed science. But that being kept in mind, this bolsters that point. If it's going to be found in your sweat glands, it's clearly not staying in your arm or your shoulder. Here's what it says. Immunofluorescence and immunohistochemical analyses detected the spike protein in 3 of the 5 patients. In these cases, the virus resided primarily in the sweat glands and sweat ducts, and with apparently higher amounts in the former than the latter, right? The glands versus the ducts. Now, they're saying the virus, but what they're talking about is spike protein. They found the spike protein in those cases, and they're just referring to that as the virus. They're saying the virus resided primarily in those areas. It says secretory secretions, right? Just so we can see this. So this is relating to or promoting of secretion, meaning that it's leaving your body, right? The secretory luminal cells were found to be major targets for exactly what they just described. In sweat gland, we found that ACE2 and TMPRSS2 were abundantly expressed in the luminal secretory cells, and viral spike protein distribution corresponded with that. Okay, abundantly expressed. So they just said the spike protein was abundantly expressed in the sweat gland. These results potentially explain the high expression of SARS-CoV-2 spike protein in sweat glands and low expression in the spike protein in the sweat ducts. Interesting. Accordingly, viral spike proteins were detected in the vascular endothelial cells of the dermis, your skin. I mean, okay. So bottom line, what the expert was saying is exactly, this is why he was saying that. Obviously, based on this research, it's very clear that this spike protein can shed. That's what they're finding, and he's backing that up as an expert. Now, going forward, remember that this one of these studies from Oxford says very clearly, the whole title, circulating severe SARS-CoV-2 vaccine antigen detected in the plasma, in the blood of mRNA vaccine recipients, May 20th. Okay, now I'm just reading exactly what it says. 11 of 13 participants showed detectable levels of SARS-CoV-2 protein as early as day one after first vaccine injection. Now, of course, because we already know they're slanted, one-sided arguments. Well, it's such a small amount. They're misrepresenting this, and it doesn't need... Okay, I'm not saying any of that. All I'm pointing out is they found that it showed detectable levels of this protein as early as one day in your blood, not your shoulder muscle, in your blood. Now, they can argue that that's not enough and it's not going to lead to illness and it's irrelevant and I'm misrepresenting it. That's fine. That's not what we're talking about, because I'm going to go on to show you that there is plenty more levels and it does end up all around your body based on the only post-mortem of an injected person from COVID-19. So, yes, they're going to say, because I'm sure you seek out and find the debunking fact check to debunk the one thing that you don't like in this article. Well, you'll hear them give you exactly what they want you to think. Oh, by the way, without extra source material, almost always. Typically just telling you what to think. But here is the point. 11 of 13 in your blood, which shows you right there that challenges the narrative. Right there. Whether or not it's not enough, whether or not it's only for a minute, doesn't matter. They're saying it's in your shoulder and that's it. False. But then, on June 2021, which nobody talked about, the first case of post-mortem study in a patient vaccinated with the injection. Now, what's interesting is that they start right off by saying he didn't present with any COVID-19 symptoms, yet he tested positive for COVID-19. Now, they go on to make it very clear in the article that all their scientific due diligence showed very clearly he did not have COVID-19, which backs up the fact that the false positives are prevalent. Even if that didn't do that in the study, which I'll show you in a second, you should still ask yourself, he didn't have symptoms. Maybe he didn't have it based on false positives of this test, based on everything else we've seen. But I'll prove it to you as we go forward. These results might suggest that the first vaccination induces immunogenicity, but not sterile immunity, meaning that it gives you an immune response, but does not actually give you the thing you need to keep you safe. Shocker, I know, which is exactly why the real world data backs up exactly what we keep saying. You can still spread it. You can still catch it. It does really nothing at the end of the day besides increasing your risk, as all the data has continued to show. And no, I'm not just talking about one thing from Israel. I'm not just talking about one thing from Scotland. I'm talking about the body of evidence we've been collecting since the beginning that shows you, based on all the real world data from all the locations, from Gibraltar, from Malta, from Scotland, from Israel, from the United States in multiple locations, right? All of these things pointing to the reality that at the end, the information shows you that it's predominantly on one side here. That they don't have protection. And that, you see, and this is where people debunk one small part of that, is taken in conjunction with natural immunity conversation, which means that most of these people, which the CDC has admitted to, have natural immunity, which means, based on other peer-reviewed scientific research, both from the CDC, the Lancet, from Journal of Infection Medicine, that it increases their risk if they get it afterward. See, one thing to the next, but if you pick out one little point and find some fact check to debunk the one thing and walk away thinking this is all fake news, that's on you. It says, on January 9th, 2021, the man received lipid nanoparticle formulated nucleoside modified RNA vaccine. Modified. Again, that's the point I was making before. And this is where BNT162B2, the one that's being given, by the way, which more than one study has listed as self-amplifying. I've shown you both the studies. I've talked about this live on the show. I was figured I could maybe grab it really quickly. Since I think this is an easy one for me to find. Maybe not. I think it was this one. Nah, I'm going to skip. I'll see. Nope. I'll circle back. As you all know to watch the show, I've done this many, many times. Oh, of course, then I lost my highlighting. Damn it. So, the point here. RNA, as it says right here. Right here. We demonstrated viral RNA in nearly all organs examined except for the liver and the olfactory bulb. Now, we're talking about viral RNA, not specifically the spike protein. But this is the same point. Remember, the mRNA is what's supposed to be encapsulated in the lipid nanoparticles, all of which are supposed to be gone, which is supposed to create or deliver the instructions for the spike protein, which are all supposed to be gone after right out. You know, that's not what's happening. So if you're seeing the spike protein in your blood within a day later, 11 of 13 people, regardless of the level, if you are seeing viral RNA in a dead body in almost all organs after the injection, there's no way to misunderstand this. Now, I lost my highlighting here. The point was, as they say in here in general, that the symptoms that they found, I'm not going to try to find it out. Read this for yourself if you're interested, because I don't want to have to skim this through and waste more time. But I've done at least two shows I've talked about this before, right? The fact that I have to continually bring these things back up to reiterate the point is what continues to be frustrating, but we will keep doing it for you constantly. But they found very clearly in the article or in the research that they didn't find any symptoms or any indication that they ever had SARS-CoV-2 based on all the things they continue to claim they see. So what this continues to show is there's no indication he had SARS-CoV-2, but rather one of two things, false positive or because of the injection, he then tested positive, not necessarily because he had COVID-19, but because of however this thing is reacting to what they're dealing with because of the mRNA, because of the spike protein, who knows? I'm not saying I have all the answers, but the bottom line, if you have mRNA, viral RNA on almost every organ in your body, if you can find the spike protein throughout your blood within one day later, all this information collecting to realize that this is very obviously a possibility. And yet this entire topic is being dismissed as absolute fake news. Here's the Salk Institute, one of the highly respected scientific publications. Read the study for yourself. I've gone over it line by line on this show, proving that the spike protein alone was enough to cause disease, not just illness, but spreadable disease. So if it can shed and pass on and then create illness, which you can then shed again, is that not what we might be seeing right now? Certainly possible, isn't it? But nope, not allowed to talk about it. Here's another study. SARS-CoV-2 spike protein impairs endothelial function via downregulation of the ACE2. In the current study, we show that the spike protein alone can damage vascular endothelial cells in your brain by downregulating ACE2 and consequently inhibiting mitochondrial function. Yeah, but it goes away immediately, right? Of course it does. Now, this is the one of the other important ones, and this is December 2020. The spike protein of SARS-CoV-2 crosses the blood-brain barrier. Now, both these are talking about this virus, the argument of the virus, not the injection and sticking around. But the point is these things are very clear that the spike protein itself is able to do these things. So if you're injecting this in your body and it's circulating your blood, it's obvious what's happening. On top of the fact that it could very clearly lead to creating blood clots, which we are seeing. All this is backed up by the data. Now, for people that have only just caught this one show, do your due diligence. We've done entire shows around each one of these studies and proving these things by others' peripheral information. It's very obvious this is possible. And if you're unwilling to acknowledge that, that's a choice. Which brings us to the illusion of specifically myocarditis, but how we are watching the risk be ignored for people who have no risk. As the CDC said, or rather Kamala Harris said, by vaccinating the unvaccinated, increasing our testing and masking, protecting the vaccinated, we can end this pandemic. And as I said, protecting the vaccinated? Well, those with natural immunity, the CDC puts it at far more than half the country, are immensely better protected according to the NIH, which I've shown you, according to Nature, which I've shown you, according to the WHO, which I've shown you, according to the Lancet, which I've shown you, and many more, which I've shown you, especially against the variants, which I've shown you. Sounds like the vaccinated are the vulnerable ones. All right, Science Magazine itself, was the, they did their own, they study found that you, if you are having, if you have natural immunity from the beginning, you right now are protected from multiple angles against 23 variants, including the variants of concern. I fell. Geez, there it was. One, just, oop, wrong one, of course. This is the study I'm referencing. Right? It's not very hard to see that this stuff is out there. Ultra potent antibodies against diverse and highly transmissible SARS-CoV-2 variants. Wang et al. Identified 4 antibodies from early outbreak convalescent donors, meaning people that got infected and nothing else. And they're potent against 23 variants, including variants of concern. Right now, they're telling you that the vaccines aren't stopping the Delta variant. This is impossible to miss. This is being kept from people's view. Now, this is the, this, and as much as this is a joke, I mean, laugh at it because it's funny, but think about how absurd it is. This is what we're talking about, right? That you're protected if you've got natural immunity, on top of the fact that 99.98% of people are pretty much not in danger anyway. So they're saying the protected, the injected, need to be protected from the unprotected, being people like us, by forcing the unprotected to use the protection that didn't protect the protected. I mean, I just couldn't stop laughing when I mean, this is so ridiculous. So no, to insert the right words, the injected need to be protected from the uninjected by forcing the uninjected to use the injection that didn't protect the injected. The protected need to be protected from the unprotected by forcing the unprotected to use the protection that didn't protect the unprotected. It kills me. This is how broken these things are. You're squinting at it just in the right way. Oh, it's perfect. It's the unvaccinated. We know it. Well, here is Eric Ding pointing out something that really bothers me. Well, first of all, let's listen to what this deputy provincial health officer of British Columbia had to say, right? So it's amazing how this is the point I'm keep making, that these are both considered experts in fields, and yet one is saying something that the narrative doesn't agree with, and one is backing up the narrative. Now, one is fake news, and the other is now an expert. You see how that works? It doesn't matter that you have credentials. It doesn't matter that you've worked your whole life to back this up or you've whatever. You're now debunked because Eric said so. And now you're going to have an entire article that points something out about why you're debunked. About you changed an opinion one day. Oh my God, this person's debunked, right? That's how this is going. How do you argue? Do you realize how ignorant it is to argue that an entire person's life career is debunked? Oh, that one guy, he's debunked because of this one fact check about one argument. Isn't it possible that the fact check should be wrong? Yeah, they've been wrong about a hell of a lot long before COVID-19. But yep, let's just trust the fact checkers who literally are tied to Pfizer and different other companies that we've proven on this show. But who cares about their financial incentives? Because that doesn't play a factor, right? I'm not even implying that's the only factor. The point is there's a million reasons why these people have a political agenda. And even the simple fact they could just be wrong because they're listening to the wrong information. Right, that we've shown you that's later influenced by politics, such as the CDC lying about breakthrough cases, or the CDC lying about where the data comes to argue it's a pandemic of the unvaccinated, such as using only the first 6 months of data. So it looks like the unvaccinated because it's a time when most were unvaccinated. That's not an accident. These are willful deceptions. And so the point is that this is what keeps happening, is they just continue to, you are no longer an expert because you don't go along with the point. Now listen to what she has to say.
This is an infection of everybody, but an illness of adults, and in particularly older adults.
That's it. Right. So how dare she argue the point that's backed up by their own data? This is a pandemic of adults. That's it. So that was too much for him. He says any health chief who still claims that kids are not at risk of COVID, okay, which is literally the fact, again, quite literally, here's the Oxford University calculator of threat for COVID-19. I don't know. I'm going to do this every single day for the rest of this my life if we have to make this point. That they keep arguing that they'll, how dare you say that they're, now no one is arguing that there's not something that could happen, right? People, kids are at risk from the flu to some degree. So are we going to shut down their entire lives forever because there's a small, small risk? No, we're not. But that's the same point here, even though I disagree with even that. Because look, 19-year-olds, according to Oxford University, have a 1 in a million chance of dying from COVID-19. 1 in a million. Their risk of hospitalization is 0.0021%. You could back this up from the meta-analysis I've shown you before of 113 different studies of the infection fatality rate of COVID-19, which also finds that people under 25 are dramatically lower risk than even the flu. Now, these are all backed up by the CDC, by the NIH, by their own data. And yet that me pointing out that kids are literally at zero risk is somehow fake news? One in a million is what we use to joke. It's a one in a million. It means not possible. And we use it, you know, colloquially, just have a general statement. But it also means quite clearly, statistically speaking, 0%. It's a fact. So here we are. Where were we? Right here. With this expert calling for this person to be fired for claiming that kids are not at risk, which they aren't. Or, he says, that kids almost never get hospitalized. Do you realize that the only number the U.S. government still cites is 400 kids from the entire beginning of this? We're talking about deaths, by the way. I'm talking about deaths. It's 400 kids. That's it. And by the way, even the mainstream media has pointed out that they have yet to verify a single one of them. It's not hard to look this stuff up. I did an entire show about this. I believe it was Newsweek, if I remember correctly, but regardless, they pointed out that there is actually 380-something, I believe, and with 22,000 employees of the CDC, not a single one of them has been verified to be absolutely because of COVID-19. Then we can point out Newsweek on top of that pointed out that 45, almost 50% of all the hospitalizations turned out to not be related to COVID around children. I mean, it's staggering the level of misinformation coming from the people we're supposed to be listening to. But because she says, by the way, that it's an adult, a pandemic of the adults, he translates that into, I mean, this is a misrepresentation. He's saying they need to be dismissed or terminated. Think about how crazy that is. Now, on that note, let's make sure the one thing that needs to be pointed out around this, the myocarditis discussion, is made very clear yet again. There's plenty of others. There's plenty of other risk around vaccine-induced thrombosis, thrombocytopenia, Bell's palsy, stroke, blood clot, on and on, for any age. But the myocarditis risk is dramatically increased for young boys. And by the way, for anybody who takes this injection. So again, kids with 0% risk, one in a million, are being injected with something that 100% to some degree increases their risk. Here is the CDC. Here's actually, this is Durham. Somebody shared this with me and I forgot to grab their tweet. There's the actual CDC website. This is about myocarditis. Preliminary myocarditis, pericarditis reports to Bayer's following dose 2 of mRNA COVID vaccines. There's no way to misunderstand what this shows you. For every single category specifically women and men, boy, male, female, from 12 to 17. Let's just look at females. The expected rate. Do you remember how they keep screaming that it's not outside the normal, right? It's a normal occurrence of what we would expect. Okay. Well, according to them, in their own study, which nobody seems to know about, 12 to 17-year-olds in the female category, they expected 1 to 7 naturally occurring myocarditis, which, by the way, I don't even know how that makes sense from what I've seen statistically speaking, but let's just pretend that's accurate for now. Guess how many they saw? 20. 20. That's more than two times the amount at the top. That's 20 times if it's the one level, right? So 10 times the amount, give or take. 10 times the expected amount. And that's acceptable? Now, before I even get to that, I want to include this again just because I can't. This just continues to blow my mind. That what we're talking about here is a study from 2012 on myocarditis in general. And it clearly shows you what non-fulminant means, not serious or coming on set fast. It says that active myocarditis, non-serious, has a mortality rate of 25 to 56% within 3 to 10 years, owing to progressive heart failure and sudden cardiac death, especially if symptomatic heart failure manifests early on, which is what we're seeing. So non-serious cases. Read this further if you want to understand how crazy it gets with serious cases, but not, which is like sudden death kind of stuff. Non-serious cases could lead to an increase of mortality in the next 3 to 10 years by up to 56%. Okay, so remembering that, 10 times the increase for 12 to 17-year-old females. Males, however, the expected amount was 1 to 12. They saw 132. 132. I mean, God, this floored me because of the reality of how, if you're expecting 1 to 12, that means taking a low of 1, that's 132 times the risk. 60 times the risk if you shoot it in the middle. Or no, actually, no, that's not. Close enough. The point is that it's a dramatic increase in your risk. How about going up to the next age, 2 to 25 year olds? 2 to 25. Oh, excuse me. No, 18, 24. I'm looking at the wrong number. So now we're up to 25, 24 year olds. They're all talking about young boys, 24 year olds. Look at the observed amount was 2 to 25 cases. They saw 233. Clearly, the highest risk is from 18 to 24. 233 cases when they expected 25 at the most. Why was this not discussed in the mainstream media? Because they're not trying to inform you of your risks. It blows me away. Now, you can go through this and continue to read the information that they'll never tell you about. But the reality is it's all right in front of you, and it always has been. Here's what even the CDC website says about this risk. Most patients with myocarditis, I'll just say myocarditis because pericarditis is a variation of, but they tend to just use myocarditis for the one argument, but they are slightly different. Myocarditis, patients with myocarditis who received care responded well to medicine and rest and felt better quickly. Right. Of course, that's fine. If that is the argument and that's actually the case, which I don't see the data to back it up, could be, then does that justify a potential 56% increase in your mortality with next 10 years? Patients can usually return to their normal daily activities after their symptoms improve. Normally, that sounds great. Those who have been diagnosed with myocarditis should consult with their cardiologist, their heart doctor. About what? Well, about returning to exercise and sports. That's great. More information will be shared. So they're increasing your risk by potentially 60 times if you're 18 to 25. And yeah, but then maybe it'll be problematic. Maybe you have to check with your doctor to see if you can continue to play sports. Like, this is not something that should be like, yeah, this makes sense. Do you remember the point that I always make about the swine flu argument? They had 53 reports of death on the VAERS system. 53. And they paused the entire program. There are currently almost 20,000. I think it was 17,000. There are over 500,000 reports of adverse events. And this is just, we don't know for sure. But 53, same database back then mattered more than all these today. That should scare you. The point is they're undermining how serious this risk actually is. As the cardiologist speaking with the woman and the son speaking with RFK Jr. said very clearly, he said, this is direct quote, there is no such thing as a mild case of myocarditis. That's like saying a mild heart attack, right? This is serious, no matter how the level of severity of the case. That was a cardiologist saying that on the record. More information will be shared as it becomes available. Yeah, sure. Right, we're showing you the information that they're not including. It says both myocarditis and pericarditis have the following symptoms: chest pain, shortness of breath, feelings of having fast heartbeat, fluttering, pounding heart. I should have done this and I forgot. Cross-reference that with the usual side effects of the injection. All three of those are at the top of the list. Well, guess what they say next? Seek medical care if you or your child have those symptoms. Actually, let me try to just grab this real quick. So if we're looking up common COVID vaccine side effects. Let's see what it says. Okay. All right. Well, we'll come back to the point. Nonetheless, we all remember these arguments, these discussions. That's not the full list. I mean, for crying out loud, those are not even the full list of the common side effects. I don't want to waste more time on it, but you guys remember the point. The reality that we've been pointing out: chest pains, shortness of breath. These have been common, constantly reported. I mean, I personally, family members of mine have had similar situations of sadly that they've got the injection. The point is, this is common. So they're telling you a common side effect of this is something that you should seek care for. Blows me away. But it says, yes, should you still get this or your child the injection? They say yes. CDC continues to recommend that everyone 12 years or older, so kids with 0% risk, 1 in a million chance, should still get this thing that increases their risk by potentially 60 times of myocarditis. The known risks of COVID-19 illness and its related possible severe complications, such as long-term health problems, which we have no way of knowing are even possible since we're barely a year into this, or a little more, when typically, if you look up the definition of long-term, it's pretty much a year or 2 years, hospitalization and even death far outweigh the potential risks of having rare adverse reactions to vaccination. That's ridiculous. And it says including myocarditis. Now, why that's ridiculous is because obviously that's not the truth. As even The Guardian points out, boys more at risk from Pfizer side effects than from COVID, right? There's multiple studies that make this exact argument. Here's one of them, right? Where they say, I think it was this one. The argument is the incidence of myocarditis, which is what this is about, the incidence of myocarditis exceeds their expected 120-day COVID hospitalization rate at both moderate and high hospitalizations. They're telling you that you are at more risk of going to the hospital from taking this injection than you are from COVID-19. I don't know how this stuff is not, I can't believe it continues to be ignored. September 8th. Yes, it's preprint, but this is backed up by plenty of other studies like this one itself. Results, 63 patients, 63 were included. 92 were male. All had received an mRNA injection except for one. Four patients, this is 14%. Where was it? 88% met the diagnostic cardiac magnetic resonance, CMR, Lake Louise criteria for myocarditis. 83% got myocarditis in this study. 83% of them. Myocardial injury was more prevalent in comparison to MISC patients. On top of that, 86% ultimately met the definition after follow-up. Regardless, we're almost at 90% of all the people in this study who literally were diagnosed with myocarditis. That's ridiculous. They're all here for you to look at for yourself. At the end of the day, that should not be happening. This person should be the one who is being called out for misinformation, for dangerous spreading of, you know, this is telling people this is the case is medical misinformation, right? And the problem is that people will point to what he states with text as the verification. Look at what Mr. Deng said. Okay, well, where's the scientific research? I'm sure he'll have something he'd point to. And in that case, we could look at both of them and compare them and come to our own conclusions about it. But you cannot deny that there is a huge body of evidence that very, very clearly shows you that there's an increased risk of myocarditis for a lot of age groups that's worse than the injection. Now, this brings us over to a very important point about whether the CDC is cherry-picking data and manipulating what you're looking at. Now, I'm not saying I can prove or say that this should be for you decide based on the data as everything we point to. Oops, I realized I have my screen still screwy from when I shortened it. 1 second. These kind of things drive me crazy because I'm a neurotic person. I like it to be exact. There we go. There it is. Okay. Now, going forward, this is from James Lyons-Weiler, PhD, who we've had on the show twice, I believe. Breaking news, Oregon legislators file for a federal grand jury investigation on CDC reporting protocol changes. Now, this one is specifically in regard to one that we already covered. Their protocol change in the middle of the pandemic to alter the way they recorded death certificates, because that sounds totally legitimate, right? And how weirdly, right after they did that, well, where we saw a dramatic increase, of course, that's, you know, sure, could be because they were more accurate, but we'll prove to you, as we have in the past, it's not really the case. It's more subjective, and they do it on the side of, well, it's for your safety. Right? We'll have a wider net to make sure we gather anything that could be COVID. Well, as I've said from the beginning, that's fine. As long as you don't use that verifiably incorrect wide net data source, the number, to put people in jail, to put people on lockdown, because you just admitted that you're using a wide sweep to grab things just in case. Sort of like in the beginning where they go, well, positive test and 28 days later, or which is still happening a lot of places, just in case. But then you use those numbers as absolute fact. That doesn't translate. Here is Stand for Health Freedom, the senators filing grand jury petition into CDC's willful misconduct to hyperinflate COVID data. Now it says Oregon State Senators Kim Thatcher and Dennis Linthicum, I might be mispronouncing his last name, jointly filed a formal petition for a federal grand jury investigation into both the CDC and the FDA on August 16th in the city of Medford, Oregon, Jackson County. The official letter included 8 exhibits, I'll show you next, and 20 references for evidentiary materials showing a clear need to formally investigate the agencies for willful misconduct. In March 2020, according to a paper published in the journal Science, Public Health Policy, and the Law, the CDC abruptly changed how death certificates were recorded for only one type of death, COVID-19, and circumvented multiple federal laws to do so. This hyperinflation of death certificate reporting kicked off an avalanche of data degradation and destructive public health policies. Well put, and I agree with that wholeheartedly. Now here are the downloaded documents on my server, by the way, in case they disappear. Here's what they found, and this is, you could see on behalf of all concerned citizens, the formal grand jury petition. But I want to read you quickly some of these things they found. Now it says, upon investigation, the following has been revealed. Now it starts similarly for a lot of these. The CDC and the NVSS violated the APA, PRA, and the IQA by issuing COVID-19 alert number 2 on March 24th. 2020. This alert significantly modified how death certificates were recorded and did so exclusively for COVID-19. This alert ensured COVID-19 was emphasized as the cause of death. This modification was made exclusively for COVID-19 fatalities, which makes COVID-19 exclusively a cause of death and rarely a contributing factor to death. And we'll show you this more as we go forward. It's very, we all remember this. The 2003 CDC Medical Examiners and Coroner's Handbook on Death Registration and Fetal Death Reporting states that in the presence of pre-existing conditions, infectious disease is recorded as the contributing factor to death, not the cause. This modification was medically unnecessary as existing rules for data collection and recording had been in successful use nationwide for the previous 17 years. Most egregiously, this material modification does not apply to any other infectious disease, creating a double standard exclusively for COVID-19 data collection. Sounds exactly like what we're seeing, doesn't it? As a result, COVID-19 fatality data used to shape public health policy is significantly inflated. Of course, that's their opinion, right? I happen to agree based on a lot of other things as well, but that's what they're claiming. Research it for yourself. They go on to say they violated those same things by adopting the Council of State and Territorial Epidemiologist Interim Standard Surveillance Position paper on April 14th. The paper significantly increased COVID-19 case counts, as seen in section what they list off right there. Paper acknowledged the need to define a methodology for ensuring multiple tests on the same person were not counted multiple times as new cases and then declined to define one, right? So this is a way of making sure that those loose areas don't get tied down. So we can count them multiple times, or we can have tests. There's a lot of these redundancies that they made sure were allowed, not in other cases as well. Now it goes on to say the Office of Management and Budget is appointed to oversee data collection for all federal agencies. Should a federal agency, even in the emergency situation, desire to modify any aspect of their data, of the collection of their data, analysis, or publication, they must first notify the Federal Register. Notification of intent to modify any aspect of data collection, analysis, or publication in the Federal Register alerts the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs. Notification of the Federal Register also opens the mandatory 60-day period for public comment on proposed modifications to data collection, analysis, or publication. The CDC and the NVSS failed to notify the Federal Register and therefore failed to comply with federal law. There's no misunderstanding this. The CDC has made unilateral changes with far-reaching consequences to data collection and recording exclusively for COVID-19 without federal oversight, independent of peer review, and without public comment. Does that sound familiar? Does it sound like what we talked about in the beginning with the federal lack of federal oversight for the defense contractors? It's the same thing, because this is now the war we're in, the war in your body, as Whitney Webb coined. Your body is the new battlefield. This is what we're talking about. This is not like we just go, oh, danger, we're in an emergency, therefore the law doesn't apply. They are breaking the law. And the only difference would have been to go through the proper channels and allow us to comment. But nope, why would they stop that? Now, you can go on and see a lot more in here. The FDA prevented medical professionals from prescribing and administering ivermectin, vitamin D, things that we know very clearly are obviously FDA approved. Which, by the way, today shouldn't mean a whole lot to you, but that's what they say they need. And yet they're stopping you from using FDA approved things, whatever you want to use, while pushing an experimental substance that is not even approved in all aspects today in regard to the age groups. It's unbelievable. Blatant willful misconduct. There's no way to say that's exactly what this is. The FDA refused to collaborate with independent professional experts regarding PCR to address the serious flaws surrounding the testing. And that's why they've maintained to this day 40 to 45 cycle threshold on the side of COVID testing and under 28 on the side of breakthrough case testing. That's exactly what's happening. And then, by the way, we're only going to tell you about hospitalized and death breakthrough cases and ignore all the rest of it. How does that even make sense? And even then, they then chose to hide from you 100,000 plus of those very things they told you they were counting. Because even then they go, well, now I'm just going to not even tell you about them because we're obviously hiding information from you. I hope this gets big. I doubt it will. But it's important to see that there are some people pushing. Now, this is from IPAC, the Institute for Pure and Applied Knowledge. This is James Lyons Weiler, at least in part, I believe. No, he's not a part of this in regard to the people included in the study, but this IPAC is something he had a part in creating. As I understand it correctly, COVID-19 data collection, comorbidity, and federal law, a historical retrospective. Here's what it says. It says, according to the CDC on August 23rd, and we've covered this back when they quietly said this, quote, For 6% of the deaths, COVID-19 was the only cause mentioned. 6%, that's it. 94% of all the things they've attributed to COVID-19 death had on average 2.6 additional conditions. For deaths with conditions or causes in addition to COVID-19, on average, as I said, 2.6 additional comorbidities, causes for death. 2.6. For a nation tormented by restrictive public health policies mandated for healthy individuals and small businesses, this is the most important statistical revelation of this crisis. This revelation significantly impacts the published fatalities count due to COVID-19. More importantly, it exposes major problems with the process by which the CDC was able to generate inaccurate data during a crisis, which is exactly, by the way, what the WHO has called them out for many times. Just won't read through it again, but bring it up for you guys to read at your own pace. Back in 2011, when the WHO openly called out the CDC for repeated pandemic health scares caused by culture of fear, or pushing things they don't need, or pharmaceutical industry using the boon. I mean, these are things they keep telling you that they're abusing this lie. Exactly what they're saying here. Again, the CDC has advocated for social isolation, social distancing, and personal protective equipment used as primary mitigation strategies, while simultaneously refusing to acknowledge the promise of inexpensive pharmaceutical and natural treatments. These mitigation strategies were promoted largely in response to projection model fatality forecasts from people like Neil Ferguson, Imperial College London, that have proven to be substantially inaccurate. By the way, proven to be willful deceptions, knowingly using guesses in a situation where they're claiming they're fact. We've done this. We've shown you. This is from his original report. By the way, it's not new for Neil Ferguson either. Further investigation into the legality of the methods used to create these strategies raised additional concerns and questions. Why would the CDC decide against using a system of data collection and reporting that they authored and which has been in use for 17 years without incident in favor of an untested, unproven system exclusively for COVID-19 without discussion and peer review? You know why? Did the CDC's decision to abandon a known and proven effective system also breach several federal laws and ensure data accuracy and integrity? We should be asking these questions, but nobody in the mainstream does because they don't care. Well, on top of that, here's a Daily Mail reporting that in New South Wales, I believe, in Australia, health switches to recording patients. This is as of August 29th. Switching to recording patients as dying with COVID instead of from, after finally acknowledging many Australians, 993 casualties died from something else or have been even recovered from the virus. Remember, we just played that clip from the doctor who was arguing that they should be including the people that have recovered. They're trying to lie to you guys. Like, it could not be more clear than that. If they're trying to push in information that they know is not accurate or they know is misrepresenting the situation, there's no way to misunderstand that. They would rather bloat the numbers to push something that scares you to drive what they want to happen than be accurate with you about what's actually happening. I mean, it's amazing how obvious and clear that is. But the problem is that people just don't want to listen. They want to hear what they already believe is the case. Now, what they're telling you, what they're admitting, is that they are now acknowledging that these people are not necessarily COVID deaths. And the crazy part of it is that they've had one of the lowest death count. Like they have one case pop up and these whole areas shut down. It's crazy talk. If you just take their isolated information as a microcosm and do the data, these are obviously showing you they're not at risk. But now they're even so on top of that, admitting that these are with and not from. It's breaking down all over the place. Here's a Defender reporting. Experts accuse the CDC of cherry-picking data on vaccine immunity, specifically to support political narrative. Mounting evidence shows natural immunity to COVID trumps vaccine immunity. Exactly, if it even causes that at all, in my opinion. But experts say the CDC is ignoring the longstanding science of natural immunity and manipulating data to support, quote, what they've already decided. Exactly. There's now a growing body of literature showing natural immunity not only confers robust, durable, and high-level protection against COVID, but also provides better protection than COVID-induced immunity. Now, whether you believe viruses exist or whether you believe COVID's really there, whatever your belief is, they're claiming that their scientific institutions they're telling you to listen to are telling you that natural immunity is a thing and that it's better, whether you believe it or not. So my point is, if they're saying trust these outlets and they're saying that, and then they ignore those outlets when they say that, It's an easy way to wake people up from within their deceived narrative. Now, quickly, I want to point out something I just discussed yesterday in regard to the cherry-picking concept, or not yesterday, but recently. This is The Atlantic talking about our most reliable pandemic number is losing meaning. Right? Now, no, I'm not just reading what The Atlantic says and then reading what another article says and saying that's fake because this article says I should think this. No, I look at the study itself, which is what you know we always do. And the point is, not only the walk away from this is clearly that the numbers are inaccurate, but also that they're trying to argue that, no, but at the end of the day, it's still better when you're vaccinated, right? That's the takeaway from people that just cling on to, like, the last, we have to believe this, we made the right choice. Okay, so here we are with the study itself. I've already had people make the argument that I'm misrepresenting it. Well, it's amazing that they somehow seem to miss the main point of this, which is this right here. Okay, so this is an argument about both sides of this. Now, their first takeaway is disease severity in the vaccine era among both sides, hospitalized patients, or excuse me, both vaccinated and unvaccinated, was lower hospitalization for both of them. But their statistic shows that the vaccinated had a lower hospitalization by less than 10%, but better though. Okay. Now that would mean something, at least in the valid, you know, one study against a lot of other things, had that been an accurate study. Had they said, here's 10,000 vaccinated people and here's 10,000 unvaccinated people, and let's see which group is more hospitalized, right? That would be accurate. Well, if you cared to actually read the study instead of read what they tell you to think about the study, here's what it says. Unvaccinated people in this study were 11,569. The vaccinated, 3,627, right? So more than three times the amount, or about three times the amount. So are we confused about why, no matter how you look at this, you're going to end up showing more on the unvaccinated side? Right? It's the same point they're making about their argument, their very argument about why, well, if most people are vaccinated, then most of the numbers you're going to see for hospitalization will be vaccinated, because they're talking about the Simpson paradox, all these different things they keep throwing in your face. Despite the fact that there's plenty of other evidence that suggests that that's not the case. Significant portions of people admitted to the hospital are dying from this are vaccinated. We'll talk briefly, mention that next. But they're taking a study and they're heavily slanting the numbers on the unvaccinated side, then sampling it evenly and saying, but look, 56% over here on the unvaccinated side and 42% on the vaccinated side, with a dramatically different number on either side of that. That means that if you did an accurate number, or let's say only took 3,627 on the unvaccinated side, it would be dramatically slanted on the positive side for the unvaccinated. It's easy. That's simple math. They're deceiving you with data. And if you can't see that, or you don't want to hear that, well, that's a choice. Pretty simple. Now, I'm not saying that that proves, therefore, that their finding is inaccurate. I'm saying, because I'm honest and objective, that that means, therefore, their means to reach that conclusion are faulty. And that's, nobody can deny that. That's ridiculous. Now, next point was, if they keep saying, no, but it's because, I mentioned the Simpson paradox, that's what they keep saying. Well, it's because there's so many people. The reality is that you're going to end up seeing that many more people because most people are vaccinated. Again, the same thing they tapped into to lie to you back about the unvaccinated pandemic, because they chose to take the data from a time when most were unvaccinated. So clearly, they're playing this from both sides. But then that doesn't explain why you see things like this from the British Medical Journal saying significant portions of people admitted to hospital or dying from COVID-19 in England are vaccinated, right? Or, as I keep pointing out, from Malta, Gibraltar, Israel, Scotland, that are continuing to find, and these are just ones I referenced the other day, because I'm not doing a show focused on just this one topic. I'm reiterating these points to bolster the concept of the natural immunity discussion. But again, this was from the Mail. Majority of those dying have both jabs in Scotland. And I backed this up with the Public Health of Scotland data. So is the expose. We've done this multiple shows. It's unequivocal. More people are dying than people who are, and it's right there on the, you can see the data. And that, because if their argument is it's just about cases and it dramatically reduces your hospitalization, your death, and only the pandemic of the unvaccinated, well, that doesn't align with the idea that the majority are dying and hospitalized are also double jabbed, even though they're sideways arguing that right now. But, well, the paradox, that's why, while simultaneously arguing that most of them aren't there and it's the unvaccinated, there's no coordination between this. They argue from a single point and make the argument, even though that argument challenges another side of the argument somewhere else. If you argue it from a full picture, it begins to seem ridiculous. And that's what we're constantly trying to do. Here's just the print of the same article. Now, here is another study from August 20th to continue to back this up around natural immunity. Significant reduction in humoral immunity among healthcare workers and nursing homes, home residents, 6 months after the injection, meaning as we already should know, that 6 months, this thing doesn't work. And even if it does work at all, after 6 months, it stops. And by the way, 3 months is when it begins to very dramatically drop off, if at all. And this is all based on their data anyway. But they're telling you from their study about their information that this is not working. And the natural immunity, as we continue to show, as we'll show you again, as we go through a million times, lasts potentially the rest of your life in every possible way. We'll go through it again, but let's quickly do this. We report on humoral immunity from 2 weeks to 6 months post-vaccination in 122 New Hampshire residents and 92 ambulatory healthcare worker controls with and without pre-vaccination infection. That's really important, by the way. It says anti-spike, anti-RBD, and neutralization levels dropped more than 84% over six-month time in all groups, irrespective of infection previously, which pretty much shows you, as we've said before, the injection removes your antibodies. And this is backed up by this information coming from the Red Cross. Yeah, not the page currently posted, but the two pages I've shown you that have been removed from the Wayback Machine, which I won't get into today because it's a whole other show, right? I'm only just acknowledging the people out there that are always coming up with things that we're not doing. It's because the assumption, I guess, is that right now, the only thing I'm saying is all I've ever said, right? No, there's years of bodies of work around all these topics. But the point is that this is showing that regardless of whether you have natural immunity, once you get this injection, after 6 months, you're done. You do not have measurable defense. And since we played these many times, this is an important one, first of all.
Key message from our finding is that we found that recipients of the Pfizer vaccine, those who've had two doses, have about 5 to 6-fold lower amounts of neutralizing antibodies. Now, these are the sort of gold standard private security antibodies of your immune system, which block the virus from getting into your cells in the first place. And so we found that that's less for people with two doses. We've also found that for people with only one dose of the Pfizer jab, that they are less likely to have high levels of these antibodies in their blood.
I mean, that's, you just can't get much more clear than that, right? And I forgot actually where,
perhaps most important,
this was the, where is it, right there, the Crick Institute, just so we know where you're from, right? So it's very interesting, and I've showed that many times on top of the other one that we played more than once, which is the one from the news clip. Both of which, I mean, one backs up the other at the end of the day, right? This news clip is, people go, oh, well, that was wrong. They got it wrong. This is a scientist from this institute that's clearly having this finding. You could argue he is wrong, but you can't pretend like it's fake news when this is, the scientist is finding it. When we have the Red Cross that's openly saying that we do not accept these things. I can even play the conversation I had with the lady on the phone, which clearly suggested that that's what happened. Now I'm considering doing that, but I don't want to jump into that right now. But those that remember, I talked about this on the show. I talked to the Red Cross on the phone, and she literally said that that's what was happening. The issue was that they couldn't use it because it was removing these things. And it's just so many times that we can point this out with people continuing to pretend that it's fake. It's infuriating.
Your COVID-19 vaccine, you're going to want to listen to this. The Red Cross says anyone who has received their COVID-19 vaccine cannot donate convalescent plasma to help other COVID-19 patients in hospitals. That plasma is made up of antibodies from people who have recovered from the virus, but the vaccine wipes out those antibodies, making the convalescent plasma ineffective in treating other COVID-19 patients.
Pretty clear, right? Taking that with the scientist and their finding and everything else, everything becomes very clear, especially now that we're again back to the study where they're finding that this thing, regardless of whether you've been infected, which the study again continues to find all of them, and I'll show you again in a second, that should give you lasting stuff. Weirdly, now it's gone. Isn't that interesting? Regardless of the group, you are at 84%. It says in particular, those infection naive, meaning, you know, are not infected, never had infection, residents had lower initial post-vaccination humoral immunity immediately and exhibited the greatest decline 6 months later. I this is so incredibly on the nose. So people who, whether you had it injected or not, whether you were infected previously or not, and then got the injection, this 6 months at the most, is 84% decrease in whatever they're saying this produces. However, those that never had the illness ever, but got injected, it says very clearly, had a lower initial vaccination humoral immunity immediately and exhibited a faster and greater decline. This absolutely backs up what we're saying. You have natural immunity. You're taking this thing. It actually decreases what's happening, even if that is at first creating something that you think helps you. Yeah, it's preprint, but this backs up everything we've shown up until now. So if you want to debunk what I'm saying here, you got to look at all the rest of the things we've discussed around this exact topic for the last year and a half. Here, by the way, is a lot of research, the complete breakdown of science, mainstream media, and the COVID narrative on topic of natural immunity, and many others where I've gotten into this exact discussion. I just want to give you the broad page here so you can have it, look at it, research it. There's a lot going on there. Now, here's another article, by the way, just to include from Reuters. Well, Yahoo News reporting what Reuters said, which is what I always point out, the propaganda multiplier. India study finds big drop in COVID antibodies within 4 months of vaccination. There you go. This is what is happening. And this is across the board, guys. Israel showing the same thing. Now, meanwhile, this is another one, actually. I forgot about this one. I was going to jump into the meanwhile natural immunity part of it. We'll get there next. Here's another study. Persistence of antibodies against spike glycoprotein of SARS-CoV-2 in healthcare workers post-double dose of these injections. It says of 614 participants, a total of 81 breakthrough cases. The rest, the 533 rest of the healthcare workers without any history of post-vaccination infection showed significant antibody waning. This is quick. Where was the time frame again? It was, I was just looking at it. The point, regardless, first of all, is that waning, that your antibodies do not continue despite what they want you to think, that it goes away quite quickly based on the 4 months we just talked about. Oh, and that's the point. This is the study. So 4 months of vaccination. So after 4 months, healthcare workers without any post-infection showed significant antibody waning. 4 months. So, okay, take that in conjunction with everything else and continuing to point out all your information, right? The waning, the doctor showing he removes it, and on, okay? 4-6 months, Israel backing that up. Meanwhile, the people they're telling you to listen to have been telling you since the beginning, May 27th. Had COVID, you'll probably make antibodies for a lifetime because it's in your bone marrow, right? For the rest of your lives. Here's The Lancet. SARS-CoV-2 elicits robust adaptive immune responses regardless of disease severity. Now, it also gets into T cell, right? This has been really important. SARS-CoV-2 specific CD8 T cell responses were clear and quantifiable, right? So not just what the one thing for the one spike protein, that doesn't have any effect on what's happening right now, especially because the other study we showed you in regard to the wild type vaccines based on the original and in confronting Delta are increasing your risk. That was the Journal of Scientific Infection or the Journal of Infection, excuse me. I've just talked about that. And that's what's happening. All the injections are based on the original. And right now they're telling you Delta's everywhere. Another peer-reviewed study telling you that's a dangerous thing to do. Who cares? But the point was that the injection doesn't give you all these things. But they're telling you from a lot of different angles, including The Lancet, Nature, and so on. Here's another Nature telling you that there are specifically, if you've been infected, T-cell immunity. T-cell. Memory B. Antibodies. Mucosal immunity. All these things are being given you by the natural immunity, so their research tells you. This is July 15th, 2020. It's saying that specific T-cell immunity in cases of COVID-19 and SARS and just simply uninfected controls. And you read this one, it'll blow you away. This point it aligns with this one. The point is that even if you're uninfected, even if you've never been in contact with any of this stuff or had a cold or any of this, they're still finding T-cell immunity to COVID-19 in your body. And then remember that once you get the injection, it removes all these things that have been here since long before they tell you COVID came around. Does that make sense? Same thing. A majority, this study finds, of uninfected adults already show pre-existing antibody reactivity against SARS-CoV-2. And here we are, as we just showed you, continuing to pump this stuff in your arms, which removes these things from your body. I'm just citing what the scientific research says, guys, and what the doctors have cited. I'm not telling you to listen to me. I'm not telling you to trust a fact checker or listen to the NIH. I'm telling you to look at the source material and think for yourself. But I'm a fake news spreader, apparently, because I'm spreading peer-reviewed scientific research. And God forbid giving you my thoughts on it. Now, to finish off, the illusion continues. As this is from Germany, what this is saying, questioning, and whether or not... Oh, here, these are some of the words I had to translate because they were in hashtags. Geimpft, whatever that is, means vaccinated. And this one, it means the intensive care unit. Okay. So this is saying, I assume that vaccinated people in intensive care unit can no longer be tested. That they, and the question was whether or not people was it the vaccinated on Corona can be tested. And he says, I assume that the people in intensive care who are vaccinated can't be tested anymore. Oh. It's in Germany or German, but you can read it for yourself. And this is their response. They're saying, I assume that vaccinated people who are in the hospital in intensive care aren't being tested. Shocking, right? Not really at all. Is it probably exactly what we expected? And as this person points out, vaccinated ICU patients are no longer getting tested for COVID. Think about the implications of the statement. If you only test one group for COVID, of course, 100% of the cases will be within that group. This is the kind of manipulation of data we've seen from the very beginning. As a person points out, this is what cracks me up a little bit, also in German, says, no, a vaccinated person cannot infect another with renewed infection. Oh, really? You see how misinformed the average person is? The CDCs themselves have admitted that right now that's happening. I just went through all sorts of scientific studies that said exactly the same thing. But according to this Twitter expert, that's not possible. Therefore, that's why we're not testing them. You get that? And it says, and no, it is also not important in the statistics because we don't care about vaccinated people in the hospital, right? Only the number of those who are unvaccinated is important. This is the average person, guys. They are so completely lost about what's really going on. And to finish up, I want to make a quick point here. As Bruce F. points out, he says, while watching your Tuesday program, I noted the VAERS shows a total of 61% of deaths occurred within 48 hours of injection and will then be classified as unvaccinated according to the CDC criteria, which remember they are. Even if they investigate creating another manipulation, they have all the bases covered. We investigated and found these deaths were in the unvaccinated. One other thing that struck me, says Fauci, saying when he went to school, he was vaccinated for measles, polio, etc. Most of those vaccines didn't even exist. Another lie for his truth, right? Now, this is what Bruce is saying. The point is here, the point I want to get at is unvaccinated criteria. Great point. Thank you, Bruce, for pointing this out. Because the reality is, if 61% are happening within 48 hours of injection, they are listing those as uninjected. They've already made this clear. If you got one injection and this is in your body and then something happens, there's no way we should exclude that from possibility. In some rare cases, they are counting the single, the partially injected. But in most cases, I've already shown you it's vaccinated versus unvaccinated. And if people are dying within four, and that's the point. For, as even the defenders pointed out, the VAERS information points out, at least half of the deaths that are being reported are happening within 48 hours of injection. And those are not being counted as vaccine deaths. So thank you, Bruce, for making that point, because he's absolutely right. And that's another way they're lying to you. So listen really quickly to Dr. Peter McCullough, full video linked right here, to what he has to say. Because I agree with exactly what he's saying. And actually, make sure you check out Taylor Hudak's amazing report in interview with Dr. McCullough.
I bet the New Zealand government has not made a single safety report. You have 1.8 million... We have just fulfilled all of Hill's tenets of causality, meaning that the vaccine is, we are very certain about this, the vaccine is directly killing individuals. This is a very important.
Oh, my apologies, guys. My mistake there. I forgot that I was using the microphone for the audio. I was feeling like I downloaded it. My mistake. Let me play it again. Apologies, guys.
I bet the New Zealand government has not made a single safety report. You have 1.8 million people in your country vaccinated, I bet you haven't seen a single safety report. No country has. Everybody should be disturbed about this. Wait a minute. This is a big public program. Where is the reporting on efficacy and safety? Well, two separate reports, one by McLachlan out of London, reviewed the data, reviewed the vignettes that are available in VAERS, and determined that 50% of these deaths occur within 48 hours of the shot. 80% occur within a week. They are very strongly temporally related. And then an analysis by Rose and colleagues have shown that the non-fatal injuries are in four major areas: neurologic, cardiac, immunologic, and hematologic. And they tend to skew towards younger people. They have a more vigorous spike protein production, and they cause even more damage in the human body.
Those with the least amount of risk. How disgusting is that?
We look at the yellow card system in the UK, the same pattern exists. So there is a very strong biologic plausibility, very strong temporal relationship. There's internal consistency within the US and then certainly within age groups and everything that we see. There's external consistency between the United States, the UK, the EU, almost certainly Australia, New Zealand, if we can get the data. And on top of that, it's very cohesive. That is, it's very consistent. And the signal is large. There's a large association. We have just fulfilled all of Hill's tenets of causality, meaning that the vaccine is, we are very certain about this, the vaccine is directly killing individuals. This is a very important conclusion. It's directly killing individuals. Whatever we're seeing reported through spontaneous reporting systems, there must be many more people that didn't report it, right?
The data we just cited come from the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, VAERS. VAERS is managed by the CDC and the FDA. A report submitted to the Department of Health and Human Services in 2010 concluded that, quote, fewer than 1% of vaccine adverse events are reported by the VAERS system, fewer than 1%.
What really worries me here is that that is just the tip of the iceberg. There's a report to the Select Committee, the Health Select Committee, about the CALMS database, and they suggest that only 5% of adverse reactions ever make it to the database.
Now, that's the same argument no matter where you go, right? UK says under 10%. The HHS and Harvard, which I've reported to you many times, said that that was under 1%. That's all there. It's always been there. And yet they today still pretend like it's dismissed, right? The absurd reality that he's pointing out that these are consistent across all these locations. Like, here's the thing that drives me crazy, right? There's somebody right now, and every topic you're going to go across, there's somebody out there who's going to be, well, that person's debunked, right? That doctor's been shown to be whatever. What does that matter in regard to the data that he's discussing? Does it really matter? I don't care if it's a guy in a clown suit. If he's giving you data that you can then research and back up, which, by the way, you can because I have, then dismissing something because somebody else tells you not to listen to him because this reason is ignorance. That's a choice to ignore what they're saying because you don't want to hear it because somebody told you it was acceptable to dismiss that person's statement. Look into the data. Now, some people are doing that, but the point is you need to continue to research on all sides of this and continuing to weigh both sides, right? If a fact check article says, here's the truth, look at that data, look at the research, then seek out somebody who literally says the opposite, compare them, right? The same thing's happening on people on our side of this argument, guys. People who are believing all the stuff we're talking about, and I think they're correct, but will still choose to dismiss things on another side of the argument because they don't agree with it. We can do the same thing. We need to be better. Every day. That's the main part of what we do here, right? As long as you're just a little bit better than yesterday, right? We reach one more person. That's all we need to do. But this is just data that people are dismissing continuously. As the defender also points out, of the 6,296 U.S. deaths reported as of August 27th, 13% occurred within 24 hours of vaccination. Oh, excuse me. I think I miscited the number earlier. I think I said almost 20. Trying to remember where I pulled the in regard to the deaths. I can't remember. Maybe I said it incorrectly. I can't remember. Sometimes this happens, pulling these off the top of your head. Obviously, here's the number I was saying, over 500,000 adverse events. If I said it incorrectly, I'm correcting that now. It's 6,000 in regard to specific locations as well, right? When you combine all these things, especially across countries, it's outrageous, especially specifically in the UK and Scotland. But going forward, the point was you combining these numbers. Right? 13% occurred within 24 hours, 18% with 48 hours, and 32% experienced an onset of the problem within 48 hours. It's impossible to ignore this, but everyone's choosing to that doesn't want to see the risk that's happening right now. People that have already taken this thing have decided that it's, you know, I mean, look, it's the same thing with any situation. People do not want to admit that they were fooled. People don't want to admit that their political party is wrong. People don't admit that their president is the bad guy, right? It's just childish. It's how it always has been. It's how our two-party system works. Is it possible that I'm wrong and this thing's the safest thing since, you know, anything that's ever been created? Sure, I could be wrong. I'd love to see the data that proves that all the things that we went over is wrong, but I'm open to that and I always have been. All I ask you to do out there is consider the information, consider what I'm saying, and then consider the opposite, and then come to your own conclusion. But before we leave, recognize, as Dabu points out, again, don't forget that we'll be doing the Knowledge Conference in Kentucky with Dabu in the September 24th, I believe. He's showing you that there is a lot of people standing up. We must not forget this. You are not alone. And I know you guys out there know this, especially because you're here in the show, in the channel, in the chat, and you guys know you have a community. But remember, there's a lot of people out there that do not know that there are people like them. There's a lot of people out there that are in the middle, that are just still only taking the mainstream narrative, and they're questioning it, but they just don't see anybody else because all they see every day is what the media tells them. Now, tomorrow, again, don't forget to come out for my speech in Franklin. Now, we're also going to be meeting with Derek for his activation tour on October 24th. I think I'm mixing these dates. I apologize. I got to make sure I get the conference right for Dabu's. Just look up the Knowledge Conference 2021 in case I got that date wrong. But October 24th will be the activation tour with Derek, which will also be in Nashville, Franklin area. And we are going to be connecting to wake up people around us and to continue to show people around us, like I've seen in a lot of other examples of the activation tour, that you're not the only person that thinks this way. That despite the aggressive nature of the manipulation, the propaganda, there are, in my opinion, more than not that stand with you, or at the very least, your willingness to have a choice. And this kind of a protest just shows you that the world does not want you to see that I think the majority is on your side. Somebody's saying tomorrow is my speech in downtown Franklin. I'm also going to have something on October 20th. See, now I'm confused. 24th, and also in Franklin, just so that's clear. Let me show my face so it's less confusing. So, yeah, to wrap it up here, guys, there's a lot coming your way. There's a lot more happening. We're planning on doing plenty of things out in the real world, as we always have been. But we're going to continue to speak up in public ways to wake people up, because that's what we need to be doing. We need to be confronting these people. I don't mean in a confrontational, violent way, as always. I just mean information-wise. All right, we need to have data and continue to show people what's really going on. And when it becomes red-faced and heated and angry, well, you walk away, right? Plant the seed, walk away. Circle back later, water it. Hey, you ready to hear more? No, okay, I'll come back later. You know, no hostility, no negativity. You got to be better. You have to be better every single day. Thank you all for being here today and appreciate you taking the time to continue to ask questions about what's going on and think for yourselves. Just, it's paramount today. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.